Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome, my friends. Welcome to everyone listening across the globe. We thank you for joining us as we attempt to alert humanity to the threat being carried out by a psychopathic guild of control freaks that are setting up a tyrannical world government so they can carry out eugenics operations against the population, killing at least 80% of us, reducing our numbers, through soft kill and hard kill weapons, so that a small sub-servant class can serve the elite who will enjoy all the fruits of advanced technologies and life extension. Important radio show lined up for you on this January 6, 2008, Tuesday edition. Via webcam, we're going to be live at PrisonPlanet.tv with Mike Rivero, live at PrisonPlanet.tv visually with us at the PrisonPlanet.tv website, simulcasting with the radio show. That will start coming up in T-minus 59 minutes. Then we have Dr. Edwin Vieira. You know, I read one of his books on the militia years ago and always meant to get him on, and this will be the first of many interviews. You know, he's an expert on silver and gold-backed currency, an expert on the Second Amendment, on militias, an amazing individual. He'll be joining us coming up in 2 hours. And then we have Professor Michelle Chassidowski coming on, an expert on what's happening and what's going on over in Gaza. Yesterday we read his article in near entirety, 8 pages long, I think I read 7.5, ran out of time, on what's really happening over in Gaza. But most of it's from the Israeli newspapers and mainstream news, admitting that Israel planned this a long time ago and did break the ceasefire and then put out the PR stunt that Hamas broke the ceasefire. What you're witnessing is total siege and the extermination of those people as they cut off the three cities in the Gaza Strip. So we'll be discussing that as well with Mike Rivero coming up in about 58 minutes, not just Michelle Chassidowski. Here is some of the news in front of us today. Group: Israel deliberately attacked Palestinian journalist. Israel deliberately targeted Hamas-run media installations in his bombing campaign on Gaza. Well, that's what Kissinger called for a few weeks ago. And is practicing media censorship, a journalist rights group said today. The installations in question include the Al Aqsa Television, Al Rashia, I'm sorry if I'm reading this wrong, newspaper, and the Swat Al Aqsa Radio, which the Israeli army bombed on December 8th, and over the weekend, respectively. The Geneva-based Press Emblem campaign said in a statement, citing a Palestinian media non-governmental group. The press group, which fights for better protection of journalists in conflict zones, also condemned the recent deaths of two journalists as a result of Israeli attacks. Two Palestinian journalists were killed, one in previous attacks by Israel. Photographer Hamas Shahin, who died the 26th of December 2008, and another during a current military round of the 3 January, Omar Salawi. And it goes on, the current attacks against Palestinian journalists remind the media community of the attacks that were committed by Israel against Lebanese media in July-August war of 2006, the press group said, referring to the conflict between Israel and Lebanon and their Hezbollah militia. I remember going back over to 7-8 years when they would shoot French, British, and other reporters, and it was caught on video with them laughing about it, and that's what turned a lot of European press against Israel, was the blatant killing of hundreds of journalists as a chilling effect. It didn't work. More journalists just pour into the region. Didn't work for the bullies. But the press is so controlled here that it never got on our news, so our media doesn't know.
He's the T-Rex of political talk.
Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
We are live, time stamping the date, the 6th of January, 2009. Man, that's going to take some getting used to. By the way, later today, up on Infowars.com, we're going to post a new feature. I went ahead and bought a little voice recorder, little pocket voice recorder, so it's easy to carry around with me at all times. I should have bought two or three of them. I'm no doubt going to end up losing it. I always lose sunglasses every 5-6 months and cell phones every few months when I'm carrying a cell phone. But I bought this little voice recorder, and so many times when I'm reflective and calm, late at night doing research, 1, 2 in the morning, is when I have the clearest thought process and when I'm the calmest. Or it might be driving down the highway when I listen to some propaganda on the radio and, you know, have all these hundreds of thoughts flash through my mind and connections, and then, you know, by the time I get home, all the thoughts are lost and have basically evaporated, and only a little remnant or artifact of it is left. So last night I ended up recording, I don't know, about 30 minutes of thoughts sitting out on my front porch watching the rain come down and the fog roll across the hills here in Austin, Texas. And I think it was some important information that I covered and thoughts and ideas. And so in the next few hours, that is going to be posted up at Infowars.com. And I want to give PrisonPlanet.tv members exclusive, you know, first access to most of the media we produce. So in some of them will be posted on the main site. Some of them in an indexed area altogether will be posted first in the future at PrisonPlanet.tv. And then, of course, we intend for everybody to rip it from there and put it out everywhere, but I do want to give it to members first. Just something added we're going to do. I'm also going to be starting in the next few weeks a little 5-minute news blitz where I get the most important stories of the day, and I'm under a time constraint, so I won't belabor each story. So people that want a quick news brief, I'm going to have a little 5-minute report. I'm going to start taping generally after the show because normally even more news breaks then. I'll have 30 minutes or so to check out what's happened, do an analysis, and then put it out looking at the legislation and other things that are happening. We're now getting a look at Obama's policies, this near trillion dollars that they want for, quote, a stimulus. And it is to force carbon taxes on businesses, to pay them to acquiesce to going along with it. And it's to pay new enforcers for the flatulence tax for all barnyard animals, for methane. There's also a bunch of money in there for eugenics and Planned Parenthood operations in the third world. But it's all billed as helping the third world. So I want to go over some of that today as well. Henry Kissinger, he's done it hundreds of times, but he specifically called for a new world order yesterday on CNBC in relation to the Middle East and what's happening in Gaza. And he basically endorsed everything that's unfolding in Gaza, took the Israeli side, of course, 110%, and then said that Obama just has such a wonderful people have such a great perception of Obama worldwide that he's going to be able to really get the New World Order installed and that they need to use this crisis to bring in a New World Order. And that made me remember his quote that he made in Evian, France, to the Bilderberg Group, where he said, "Today America would be outraged if UN troops entered Los Angeles to restore order," referring to the 91 riots in Los Angeles. "Tomorrow they will be grateful. This is especially true if they were told that there were an outside threat from beyond." And that, of course, is Al-Qaeda. That's what Brzezinski, one of his colleagues, wrote in the Grand Chessboard. They needed an outside threat. "Whether real or promulgated," this is a quote, Let me go back and read the whole quote. Today, America would be outraged if UN troops entered Los Angeles to restore order. Tomorrow, they will be grateful. This is especially true if they were told that there were an outside threat from beyond, whether real or promulgated. Promulgated, that means staged, that threatened our very existence. They also use fake environmentalism, fake global warming. You see, another threat, as Richard N. Haass, the Club of Rome in 91 wrote, same year. It was in their official public publication where they said, we'll use fake environmentalism to control and create serfdom and the threat of fake terror, the pincer attack, like a beetle grabbing a little juicy bug it's going to eat with its two pincers. It is then that all peoples of the world will plead to deliver them from this evil. The one thing every man fears is the unknown. When presented with this scenario, individual rights will be willingly relinquished for the guarantee of their well-being granted to them by the world government. Emphasis added. And I know I just stopped and made comments. Let me read it all again. This is an important quote. I know you may have heard it before. Today, America would be outraged if UN troops entered Los Angeles to restore order. Tomorrow they will be grateful. This is especially true if they were told that there was an outside threat from beyond, whether real or promulgated, that threatened our very existence. It is then that all peoples of the world will plead to deliver them from this evil. The one thing every man fears is the unknown. When presented with this scenario, individual rights will be willingly relinquished for the guarantee of their well-being granted to them by the world government. Now, that's what he said back in 91, and he said something similar yesterday afternoon. And I appreciate listeners giving us a heads up on this, and Kurt found the clip and on YouTube and did get a story out last night, an excellent story that begins like this. Every time I see the aged Henry Kissinger, I am reminded of the worst kind of pornography. In fact, I am reminded of a snuff film. Henry Kissinger is likely one of the most notorious killers of the planet, a monster that makes Charles Manson look like a silly schoolboy. Manson did not actually kill anybody. He had his brainwashed zombies engaged in the dirty work. Kissinger didn't kill anybody either. He had the Pentagon, the CIA, and various cutthroat clients do his dirty work. That is to say, the dirty work of the global elite. Charlie had a few deranged girls on LSD do his bidding. Henry enlisted whole armies to commit the crimes he engineered for his bosses. And then he goes through the Cambodian genocide engineered by Kissinger and Brzezinski. They brag about it. They're proud of the 4 mil. How Kissinger brags that he sabotaged the 68 Vietnam peace talks so another 30,000 U.S. troops and over a million Vietnamese could die. That was after he sabotaged it. He would get angry at newspaper reporters and poets in Chile and publicly bragged that it was a personal vendetta to have them killed, and he did have them killed, tortured and killed. So he's a dangerous guy to mess with. You know, we go to Bullhorn Bilderberg and we go basically harry them and annoy them and fluster them and let them know they're not God. I mean, the last place they met in Chantilly, the main meeting hall, most of the complex was 50, 60, 70, 100 yards, depending on which area it was. There were roads all around it. It was right by the National Reconnaissance Office, right by Defense Intelligence, in a huge complex of private defense contractors, Raytheon and Lockheed, and all of them, basically. They're in Chantilly. They're at the Marriott. And the one spot where we were only 20 yards from the building was the wing sticking off the end that was the big conference room. And we're bullhorning, guessing they're in there because we'd already been in and reconned it days before they kicked us out and Bilderberg moved in. We knew that was one of the biggest conference rooms. And out comes Richard N. Haass, angry, looking at us and a bunch of other globalists. And they'd have world leaders pulling in, and they'd play their national anthem when they'd enter. And we know Obama snuck in there as well. But, I mean, I know we're playing with fire, but we have to. We have to stand up against these killers. We can't just go quietly into the night with these people. But anyways, Kurt did a great story just going through all the horrible things that he did and then giving the latest quote that we'll play coming up at the bottom of the hour. Again, the story is up on PrisonPlanet.com and InfoWars.com. Kissinger calls for a new world order. It's a good headline, but the problem is there's so many times he calls for new world order, it's going to get confused with other ones. That maybe it should have a sub-headline like, says Obama can use Israel crisis to bring in world government or something like that, or just to clarify that this is in this particular time frame, but it's a great story. I like a line Kurt put in an article a few days ago about Obama where he said that Obama is like a cigar shop wooden Indian they stick out front to attract people into the store. And that's what he is. That's what George Bush is. They're just little front men that take all the blame for the globalist agenda. They're certainly fellow travelers, but in the final equation, our minds are designed primitively to see the chief as really being the chief. But he's not the chief. He's a puppet. Our country's been captured by foreign Madoff-type bankers. So we'll go over that. AFP, French news agency, group, Israel deliberately attacked Palestinian journalists. We're going to get more into that. Norwegian doctor says Israel intentionally targeting civilians. Israel using depleted uranium against Gaza victims. Madoff sightings cause heads to turn in New York. Yeah, he's still out and about. Because you steal $100 billion, it's not $50 billion, more than $100 billion, then you get taken care of. I mean, he's a founder of the NASDAQ. I mean, this is a top banker. Panetta, a surprise pick to run the CIA. FBI plans huge hiring blitz. We got Mike Rivero coming up, Dr. Edwin Vieira, and Michelle Chasadosky. Stay with us. Welcome back. Thank you for joining us today. He used to carry his guitar in a gunny sack. Go sit beneath the tree by the railroad track. Old engineer machine sitting in the shade. Strumming with the rhythm that the drivers made. When people passing by, they would stop and say, oh my, but that little country boy could play. Go, go. Coming up in the next segment, I'm going to play in its entirety the little three-minute interview on CNBC with Henry Kissinger on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange as he was visiting the heart of the power of the New World Order, their fraudulent casino where they rip off the public that ties into their private central banks that engage in fractional reserve banking. Because, see, right now, I mean, you really thought they'd let you invest in pension funds and let you retire? You really thought they'd let you have your 401ks? No, they're going to steal them from you. Because they're conquerors, they're criminals, they're bold, they're daring, they're wicked, they enjoy stealing, they enjoy hurting people. Oh, but a lot of folks thought, that's okay as long as it's Iraqis, or as long as it's Cambodians, or as long as it's Chinese. Oh yeah, they helped engineer the mass murder over there. As long as it's Russians, or as long as it was Germans, as long as it was somebody else, as long as it was Palestinians, it's okay, but us Americans, we're on top of everything. No, you're going to be robbed and are being robbed as well until you wake up and say no. We have such a history of liberty. We have the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, the Fourth, the Fifth, the Tenth. If we simply stand up and say no to all this fraud, it will implode. But if we continue to let them just masquerade around, stealing us blind in plain sight, things are only going to get worse. And then when Mike Rivero's on with us, when we go live at PrisonPlanet.tv in 34 minutes, I'm going to play the clip without audio, just so viewers can, on PrisonPlanet.tv, can look at the body language of the power pimps, the little fawning minions who are just worshipfully looking at him like he's the Holy Grail or something. It's just so disgusting. People are saying, well, how is that going to work only visual for radio? No, I mean, I'll be pointing out to Mike, who'll be on his live video feed from Hawaii on PrisonPlanet.tv into our studio, just asking his opinion about the disgusting body language and if he noticed that as well. I mean, they're just smiling and gazing and they're in awe, like when they have a Rockefeller or a Rothschild on TV. Wolf Blitzer, normally completely calm and composed and focused, was just almost stammering and just looking at her like he was staring at Valhalla or something. Mrs. Rothschild, because these people are power worshipers. They are psychopaths, and psychopaths worship the bigger psychopaths above them. They worship the black boot, the ski mask, the machine gun, when it's being used against screaming, begging groups of stripped civilians covering themselves, being herded into pits to be machine gunned. They love it. It's beautiful, just like an abortion's beautiful to them. They've said it on record, the power they get from it, the raw exercise of power, the bestial, low-level reptilian brain feeding. Kissinger calls for a new world order, so that is coming up after the break, and we'll analyze it. And then I'm going to get into just another amazing story, Israeli wiretaps, the NSA and 9/11. Now, going back over a decade, I've had James Bamford on, former 2020 producer, Nightline producer, best-selling author, when he wrote several books, I remember one in the late 90s about the NSA, and people were calling in going, there's no such thing as Echelon. Now, it's all admitted, of course. And then he also broke Operation Northwoods in the National Archives when he had his people digging through the stacks right after it was declassified, the plan to stage terror attacks in the U.S. by the Pentagon. But there's been some new developments on this. The fact that it isn't even the NSA that runs the wiretapping, it is Israel. So I think it's pretty clear that there is a, frankly, you have to tell it like it is, there is a serious takeover of all key national security infrastructure by the state of Israel, and they're definitely a big part of the internationalist coup against the United States.
There's a man going around taking names, and he decides who to free and who to blame. Everybody won't be treated all the same. There'll be a golden ladder reaching down when the man comes around. The hairs on your arm will stand up at the terror in each sip and in each sup. Will you partake of that last offered cup or disappear into the potter's ground when the man comes around?
Listen up.
Hear the trumpets, hear the pipers. 100 million angels singing. Multitudes are marching to the big kettle drum. Voices calling, voices crying.
You know,
some are born and some are
the
dying.
Secular humanists say there is no God.
It's Alpha and Omega's kingdom come.
But really what they're doing
and the whirlwind
is setting up
is in
the elite, the scientific dictatorship, the wise men
are all trimming their
as
wind.
God. And they say that they're going to split the species into the Superman and then basically exterminate us, the general public, the old fallen man. When you really study the globalists who try to tell everybody to be atheist or to not believe in right and wrong, they're only trying to neutralize your inner moral compass, your conscience, that your soul that tells you what's right and what's wrong. So they tell you, yeah, go ahead and have 50 million abortions in the U.S. Yeah, go ahead and have hundreds of millions of abortions worldwide every year. Yeah, go ahead and sterilize people. Oh, go ahead and kill old folks. You know, their lives aren't worth anything. We have a bioethics board of men at the hospital who decide when you live and when you die. And they sell it all like it's a right, but then they decide. And then you have this public who has no moral compass, and they're all so focused on themselves, they're all so into their own little pipe dreams, their own little delusions, that they don't understand that when they don't care about their neighbors, their community, their society, when they don't care about themselves enough to be informed because of their selfishness. I've seen people who revel in not being informed and smile and laugh and act like they're winning because they're not involved and aren't concerned, and laugh at those of us that are trying to know the truth and are trying to be informed. It takes great research and focus and discernment to even have any idea of what's going on. I can't imagine just not caring. There was a story in the news today about Joe Biden a few nights ago. Tried to go and see a movie. And the Secret Service showed up a few minutes before he did. And there were still tickets available to the new Brad Pitt movie. And so by the time he got there with his wife with more Secret Service, a big entourage, it was sold out. But the issue is that there was a big crowd of people there, and none of them recognized Joe Biden, but the manager. No one cared. Remember the polls that they've had where over 80% of Americans, they have a yearly survey they do, don't know who Dick Cheney is. It isn't that they don't know who Dick Cheney is, it's that when they're being polled, they don't bother themselves to even think who Dick Cheney is. And so the mind, like a muscle, becomes atrophied. So, see, they don't even know who the puppets are, much less who the men behind the throne are. So they just kind of halfway hear the news, if they're even paying attention to it, or they see a headline in a newspaper. And you can't have a society like that. You can't have a society where the people are asleep at the switch. You will have criminals come in and take control, and they will take over government, and they will use it as a mechanism, as a force, to expropriate everything you own. And not just everything you physically own, the capacity to generate that wealth, your liberty. They will destroy it. They understand how important it is. They're threatened by it. And you will rapidly then have no future. And they will then take your mind. They will take your soul. They traffic in people's souls. They will brainwash you. They will dumb you down. They will destroy the language. They will reduce our lexicon to the point of where we're braying farm animals. Obama. Here's the story. Sold-out movie thwarts Biden's. Okay, if it wasn't them, then who were those Secret Service guys? This is out of the Delaware News. Delaware News Journal. He's a heartbeat away from the presidency. But that apparently didn't help Joe Biden get a movie ticket Saturday night. Employees at the Regal Brandywine Cinemas say the vice president-elect and his wife, Jill, tried to attend a 7:45 showing of The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. At the theater on Concord Pike, but left after they were told the movie was sold out. There's been no confirmation from the Biden camp, but the theater employees say they were sure it was him. Ishira Mutmut, an associate manager, said she closed her box office line when she saw what appeared to be a Secret Service agent coming her way. This is a foreigner who has a family that were foreigners who, again, isn't that foreigners were ever smarter than Americans, it's that they've been under tyranny, they're more focused. I've just noticed that. I mean, you tell somebody from Germany, you tell somebody from Russia, you tell somebody from India, you tell somebody from the Middle East about tyranny, they go, of course. They know all about secret police and spying and corruption and propaganda. But Americans are like, there ain't no such thing as propaganda. Again, they have no concept. The man asked her about tickets for the movie, which stars Brad Pitt, then left. A few minutes later, she said, the Bidens came into the lobby. Jill Biden walked up to speak with the manager while Joe stood nearby. She was asking me about other shows, but they really wanted to see Benjamin Button, he said, but was maybe 5 feet away looking at her. He was standing with the other Secret Service men. Remarkably, none of the other moviegoers appeared to notice. Employees said nobody mobbed Biden or called his name or asked for an autograph. It didn't seem that many people recognized him, said employee Becky Ginrich, 21. Honestly, I think people were just too wrapped up in themselves to notice. Okay, let's stop right there. This is very important. You know, Biden likes that. He's sophisticated enough where these guys don't even enjoy being worshipped by throngs and crowds, the real operators, and Biden's definitely one of them. Bill Clinton's a rare breed because he's an intellectual, you know, genius at evil and Machiavellian activity, but he also revels in crowds. But most real masterminds do not revel in crowds. And Joe Biden's definitely a mastermind. I mean, he's not a top globalist, but he's a go-between. He's a liaison. He's a trusted crook. He helped plan the 9/11 attacks, and we've covered that on the Senate Intelligence Committee, meeting with Mahmoud Ahmed and others from Pakistan on 9/11 and the week before. But side issue, very evil. And they know that. Biden and others know that when they go out and crowds don't know who they are, they revel and look at how blind these people are. Look at how uninformed they are. And that's the ether in which they swim, counting on people not being informed, not being involved, not being aware of anything that's going on. And that's what they count on. So the general public has learned to have this satisfied, foolish grin on their face and this pride of being ignorant. But it'll get you hurt, and it is getting you hurt. We're going into a depression. It's by design. It's engineered. They can talk about, will the stimulus package fix it? Are the auto industry, are they going to cause it? Was it the subprime? It was all contrived. So they're just busy confusing the public right now on that issue. But the larger point here is employee Becky Ginrich, 21, said, honestly, I think people were just too wrapped up in themselves to notice. What an intelligent young lady. Because that's what it's all about. They are so wrapped up in themselves, they'll walk right off a cliff. It's a mental illness. It's a mass psychosis. Well, they watch so much television, it literally puts you in a lower brainwave. It puts you in a sleep state, puts you in a sleepwalking state. So they're just sleepwalking around. I see this all the time, and it's getting worse. They've got studies out that people are more suggestible now than they were 10 years ago. People were more suggestible 10 years ago than they were 20 years ago. People are becoming, I mean, you can just do things right in front of people. And if you just do it in a calm way, they don't notice. And see, that's because just the ambient corruption has been turned up in the background to where now it's just at a deafening roar, and they still don't notice it because they're deaf, psychically, mentally. Okay, let's go ahead and play this disgusting Henry Kissinger clip where he calls for a new world order again. And then he's written many books and publications where he says it is a world government. But still, they have Republican and Democratic operatives write news articles about myself all the time, just this show alone, saying, I'm insane, I make up stuff about world government, it doesn't exist. A new world order is just a new international agreement. No, as the Financial Times of London and the Wall Street Journal said in the last few months, it is world government built in stealth. But again, you know that, don't you, operatives? You think it's cute and funny. See, because it's not just the blind sheep that are mesmerizing in la-la land. Not just them. There's another class of people that con artists, criminals, and you got your low-level ones that aren't in the system. They're the ones that aren't professional enough or didn't have the right school, the right breaks, or the connections to be high-level psychopaths and sociopaths. But then you've got the high-level controlled psychopaths, and they just love the fact that you have been mesmerized and think it's funny and cute to be idiots. Let's go ahead and play Kissinger. Here it is.
Aaron and I are standing here on the floor now with former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, who was here ringing the bell, commemorating 30 years of U.S.-China relations, which, of course, were made possible by the hard work that Secretary Kissinger did while serving under President Nixon. And we welcome you, sir. Thank you very much for being
with
us.
Good to be here.
The obvious first question is the situation in Gaza. What is, it's an area of the world you have worked very hard on. What is your view? How serious is this?
We have to remember, Israel withdrew from Gaza unconditionally in 2005. And they are reacting to rocket attacks that have been launched out of Gaza. So the problem is, can those rocket attacks be stopped? And then they will have to stop their military operation. It's a complicated situation, but it's one that I believe will be solved, because if peace is to evolve in the Middle East, Israel has to take its responsibilities, but the moderate Arab nations have to take responsibility for the conduct of Israel's neighbors.
Do you believe that this is, some people say that everything will stop a few days before the Obama inauguration, that this is all very politically motivated. Do you think that's true?
I think it's a continuing process. The fundamental problem is, can Gaza conduct itself in a way that it is not a military threat to Israel? Then there will have to be a negotiation eventually, and soon, between Israel and the Palestinians about an overall peace settlement.
What do you think the most important thing is for Barack Obama? Obviously, you're here to talk about the anniversary for U.S.-China diplomatic relations, but if you had to say this is going to be the country or the conflict or the place that will define the Obama administration, what would it be?
The president-elect is coming into office at a moment when there are upheavals in many parts of the world simultaneously. You have India, Pakistan, you have the jihadist movement. So he can't really say that it's one problem, that it's the most important one. But he can give a new impetus to American foreign policy, partly because the reception of him is so extraordinary around the world. I think his task will be to develop an overall strategy for America in this period, when really a new world order can be created. It's a great opportunity. It isn't just a crisis.
Are you confident about the people President-elect Obama has chosen to surround him? Because he does not have a great deal of experience.
No, he has appointed an extraordinarily able group of people in both the international and financial field.
Mr. Secretary, we thank you very much for your time.
All right, so there you have it. There's such an extraordinary view of him worldwide. He's going to be able to get a lot done. You know, the world has been suckered in by all this mass hype, and India, Pakistan, Russia, what's happening in Gaza, all of this part of the encirclement of Asia, of the Middle East, of Europe, kicking off global crises to bring in the New World Order. A great opportunity, as he likes to say, a crisis. Remember what he said in Evian, France, about today America would be outraged if UN troops entered Los Angeles to restore order. Tomorrow they will be grateful. This is especially true if they were told that there was an outside threat from beyond, whether real or promulgated, that threatened our very existence. It is then that all peoples of the world will plead to deliver them from this evil, fake environmentalism, fake global warming, terrorism. The one thing every man fears is the unknown. When presented with a scenario, individual rights will be willingly relinquished for the guarantee of their well-being granted to them by their world government. And I interjected the point about using the pincer of fake global warming, a global crisis, for a global solution, which is a tax to the bankers. Forget all the real environmental issues. When we come back, I want to play part of two clips. These are posted in a story that is up on Infowars.com dealing with the National Security Agency being basically run by Israeli Mossad-controlled companies. And this is James Bamford, a former producer of Nightline in 2020, and has written a bunch of best-selling books on the NSA. And so much of the key infrastructure of this country is controlled by Israel. You know, it's an Israeli company that controls the security for U.S. nuke sites, nuclear weapons. Wonder how that Minot thing happened with the missing six cruise missiles. And Israel controls over 95% of the caller ID in the nation, just like IP address on internet with Google, which is Israeli. Then you have these two main companies that run the software that is the NSA. So I want to come in and play some of Bamford and then play another clip of some other reporters getting into this. Stay with us. In 6 minutes, we'll be live with Mike Rivero, simulcasting the radio show at PrisonPlanet.tv with a live feed. For PrisonPlanet.tv members, we'll then post after the show the archive. We're going to be live at PrisonPlanet.tv for 3 hours today. Talk about the history of the Second Amendment and the militia with Edwin Vieira coming up in an hour and 5 minutes. And Professor Michelle Chasidowski in the fourth hour today to talk about Gaza and other developments worldwide. Later in the show with Chasidowski, I'm going to play these full clips from Democracy Now! This is James Bamford talking about his new book, a very prestigious writer, and just telling you what we told you years ago, that Israel and intelligence basically runs the NSA. Here it is.
So you have one copy of everything coming in and going to NSA secret room. And in the secret room was equipment by a private company called Naris, a very small company hardly anybody's ever heard of, that created the hardware and the software to analyze these cables and then pick out the targets NSA is looking for and then forward the targeted communications on to NSA headquarters.
So you have these companies, AT&T and Verizon, that are secretly working with the NSA and tapping Americans' phone lines. And these companies actually outsource the actual tapping to some little-known foreign companies?
Yeah, there's two major, or not major, they're small companies, but they service the two major telecom companies. This company, Naris, which was founded in Israel and has large Israel connections, does the basically the tapping of the communications on AT&T. And Verizon chose another company, ironically also founded in Israel and largely controlled by and developed by people in Israel, called Verint. So these two companies specialize in what's known as mass surveillance. Their literature, I read this literature from Verint, for example, that's supposed to only go to intelligence agencies and so forth, and it says we specialize in mass surveillance, and that's what they do. They put these mass surveillance equipment in these facilities. So you have AT&T, for example, that you know considers it's their job to get messages from one person to another, not tapping into messages. And you get the NSA that says we want copies of all this. So that's where these companies come in. These companies act as the intermediary, basically, between the telecom companies and the NSA.
Now, Jim Bamford, take this a step further, because you say the founder and former CEO of one of these companies is now a fugitive from the United States somewhere in Africa?
Well, this is a company that the U.S. government is getting all its tapped information from. It's a company that Verizon uses as its tapping company, its eavesdropping company, And very little is known about these companies. Congress has never looked into any of this. I don't think they even know
okay.
that there is that these companies.
Okay, we're going to get more into this later in the fourth hour today. We can also get Mike Rivera's take on it later in the next hour. We're going live at PrisonPlanet.tv here in a few minutes. But look, this is only a small grouping of the Israeli companies who are literally above the NSA. They get all the data, the phone systems, computers, everything. With all the Israeli spies that have been busted, the NSA allows us to go on. This is not our government. It's controlled by foreign banks, period. And Israel is used as the armed guard by the New World Order to enforce over our own crooked government.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. We are now into hour number two of the syndicated radio broadcast, 11 to 3 p.m. Central Standard Time daily. The websites are Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com. Don't forget the free podcast, now downloaded by over 120,000 people a day for free at Infowars.com. You can listen how you want, when you want, where you want, and save the shows. And we've also started simulcasting large portions of the radio show live streaming at PrisonPlanet.tv. For our members there, we also archive it for members, and then it's ripped to the four corners of the Google spheres, as Bush likes to call them, the internets, reaching millions and millions a week that way, just what we can track. So very, very exciting, and we thank all of you out there for your support. For the next 59 minutes, we're joined by Mike Rivera. And Mike, of course, was famous for being one of the first to expose the Vince Foster murder, had one of the first real muckraking websites back in the mid-1990s on the web, whatreallyhappened.com. And he's also a fellow Genesis Communications Radio talk show host here on weekday evenings. And so he is with us for the rest of this hour to talk about Gaza, to talk about the New World Order that Kissinger's saying they're going to use the crises in Israel, the crisis with Russia, the crisis with India and Pakistan, which they're orchestrating to bring in their world government. And we'll talk about the economy and where he sees all of this going. Mike, I have to say that Obama is certainly not disappointing those of us that knew that he was going to be a New World Order shill.
Yeah, I'm afraid this has got to be one of the shortest political honeymoons in American history, because we've already got, with Bill Richardson having to bow out, Rahm Emanuel's connections to the Blagojevich, pay-for-play scandal. Yeah, I'm afraid that Obama is already going into office with some serious credibility issues. And again, I was a Ron Paul supporter, and I only picked Obama because we really weren't given much of any other kind of a choice. It's a pretty ugly situation out there. We're seeing his new economic stimulus plan come forward. It's a token amount of help to the ordinary working class American people, and as usual, more and more corporate handouts to the big boys, to the big corporations.
Well, there's also a bunch of money in there for United Nations eugenics operations, and even the Huffington Post is writing about the fact that the UN is forcing abortions worldwide. But meanwhile, Pat Robertson's defending China's forced abortions. The liberals are against it. I mean, is the world upside down, Mike?
Yeah, it very much is. It seems like people who used to be in favor of policy A have flipped over. They're now in charge of policy Z, and it goes back and forth. The neocons are more liberal than the liberals, and the liberals are actually becoming quite conservative in the paleoconservative point of view. Everybody's scrambling to find whatever position they can use to sell, and it really is not politics of principle anymore. It is really the politics of whatever's going to work and get the money and votes flowing their way.
Mike, we're going to break here in a moment and come back in a long segment. Obviously, I know you want to get into what's happening over in Israel right now. It's in the Israeli papers that they broke the ceasefire with Hamas, blocking off the entrance into Israel, the checkpoints, and killing Hamas leaders in targeted airstrikes. We have this hoax, though, in our media saying that that the Gazans, that the Palestinians broke the truce. So I want to get your take on that larger operation. But what are some of the other areas you want to get into today?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. We need to be looking at the economy, because the economy could be one of the motivating causes to bring on this so-called New World Order that Kissinger's talking about. We already know that the various laws already passed to bring about a transition of our country into a dictatorship include an economic crash as a possible reason.
All right. Mike Rivero, by the way, is our first guest via web feed, so you can visually see him as well from Hawaii. I'm in Austin, Texas, and we're live at PrisonPlanet.tv. We'll be back after these important messages. They are important. They make this transmission possible. We'll go right back to it. Mike Rivero, WhatReallyHappened.com. Stay with us.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
It is the sixth day of January 2009. Mike Rivero with us for another 52 minutes. Mike Rivero, investigative journalist, and again, the man that runs the great website, WhatReallyHappened.com. He's also a fellow who works in the media, but we won't brag on some of the great work he does on shows like Lost. Let's continue. Mike, let's get first into your take on what's really happening with Israel. I mean, obviously, you've got Olmert, who had a 32-33% approval rating, depending on the poll. Now it's upwards of 60% going into elections in 6 months. We've got that stunt going. We have this old Ariel Sharon plan. He calls it the 48 option of when they started driving the Arabs out of Palestine in 48, the year after Israel had driven the British out in 47. So, I mean, Israel's on record saying what they're doing, siege, to make life so untenable they can force them out. Do you think they're going to bring in U.S. troops? Will that be the unpopular move done January 21st, his first official day after swearing in on the 20th? Or is it all these things Obama's doing that are, quote, going to be unpopular?
Well, there's a lot of things that are unpopular right now, as we can see in the corporate media. The operation in Gaza has literally, it's being dropped in importance. It's down to the bottom crawl. U.S. troops are already directly involved. They're standing guard at the Rafah crossing to make sure that Palestinians don't escape the slaughter. So U.S. forces are already engaged, at least in that capacity. Plus, of course, we've got all the advisors who are over there with Israel teaching them how to use all this equipment that we're giving them. So we're already kind of neck deep in this situation. It's not being reported all that much. Yes, the upcoming Israeli elections are a big part of what's going on. This is a bloody campaign banner that they're waving all over the place. And the other issue is, you're absolutely correct, this is about getting the Palestinians out of Gaza. The Israelis have coveted Gaza all along. It's this nice beachfront property, would be worth a lot of money if it was redeveloped. There's all the natural gas reserves off the coast of Gaza, which Israel basically also covets. And, you know, the funny thing is, you talk about Ariel Sharon. Back in 2005, before his stroke, Ariel Sharon made this kind of deal with the United States and the rest of the world, and that was that if we would turn a blind eye to the building of illegal Israeli settlements in the West Bank, which is banned by the Geneva Conventions and UN Charter, rather, governing the use of occupied territories, if we would turn a blind eye and let them build all these illegal settlements in the West Bank, that they would pull out of Gaza and let the Palestinians just have their little piece of land down there. And I predicted back then that as soon as the settlements were completed and built in the West Bank, and there was no way of going back from that, that Israel would create a justification to go back in, reoccupy Gaza, and basically start work at building new settlements in there.
Well, Mike, by the way, you're right, but even the Israeli papers admit these battle plans written up by the former general, who's now the head of Mossad, were written up in 2000 to do exactly what you're saying in Lebanon to the north, and then down in the south on the Egyptian border with the Gaza Strip there on the Mediterranean. So this is so cynical to have our controlled corporate press telling us that, you know, the Gazans attacked for no reason. They had the border crossings blocked. They were getting bombed every week, having their leaders killed. The ceasefire was broken by Israel. That's all over the foreign press, the French, mm-hmm. the British, the German, the Russian press. But here in the United States, you know, now with the internet, I can watch foreign mainline feeds, and it's all the truth's admitted in the foreign press. Here, it's just a complete fraud. And even if you're for Israel in all of this, are you for the media lying to us as a people? I mean, that's what I'm saying to folks out there that are upset that we're reporting the facts. All we're reporting is what Israel says they're really doing, not the rhetoric and propaganda we're being fed.
Yeah, absolutely. The PR war to support Israel is more intense here in the United States than it is even within Israel itself. I think one of the things that really pegged what we call the bovine excrement meter over here at What Really Happened was last week when Bush is calling Hamas governorship of Palestine and Gaza the result of a coup, and that is absolutely a lie. Hamas won the election. It was Fatah that staged a partially successful coup to regain control of the West Bank. And given that the Bush administration's own legitimacy is very much in question because of the 2004 and 2000 election frauds, it is the height of double-dealing hypocrisy and deception for Bush to be saying that Hamas is in control of Gaza only because of some kind of a coup. And it's absolutely not true.
Might continue on that point.
Well, basically, they had an election. Everyone said, okay, we're Israel has pulled out of Gaza. It is time for the Palestinians to have an election. And they did a big show about it. And the Gazans voted for Hamas to be their government. And, of course, this upset Israel, which wanted Fatah to win, and it upset the United States, which wanted Fatah to win. And so ever since then, they have been trying to basically oust the legitimately elected government of Gaza, and that's what's going on. Now, everyone's talking about the ceasefire that was in place, and the interesting thing is that 6 months ago when the ceasefire was agreed to, Israel was already planning this current campaign inside Gaza. They built a model of Gaza City at an Israeli military base out in the Negev Desert to train and practice for. So we know all along that Israel was expecting this ceasefire to be destroyed, that it was just a fraud to give everybody some breathing room while they went out and they did their training.
Well, and to have the propaganda statement that, oh, we tried to be peaceful, we pulled some of our settlers out, and Israeli papers are cynically admitting that this was their masterstroke propaganda. That's what's so insulting, is that they're admitting what you're saying, that they intended to break the truce all along.
Mm-hmm. Well, the important thing to remember is the ceasefire, it was not only just a ceasefire, but what Hamas said to Israel is, we will stop shooting rockets at you if you will allow supplies and material and the things that we need to run our lives to come in through the border crossings. And Israel reneged on that deal. All over the last 6 months, they keep making it more and more difficult for people and supplies and medicine and food and construction materials and school supplies to get over the border. Then November 4th, right on the same day as the U.S. elections, when the American people aren't paying attention, they slam the blockade absolutely shut. They absolutely close off all the borders. They make it impossible for anything to get in and get out. They start creating this huge humanitarian disaster. No fuel can get in, so the electricity...
And so Hamas has to draw attention to the crisis, so they start shooting their Tinker Toy glorified Estes bottle rockets at them. It's killed 17 people in the last few years. I mean, that's not a good thing, but nothing compared to the thousands of dead and tens of thousands of injured in all of these history of bombing raids and attacks that have gone on there. So what bargaining chip do they have? The deal's broken, mm-hmm. and Israel acts like, you know, they gave the Gazans this land. This is where the Palestinians that were in Jerusalem and in Tel Aviv and other cities in the 40s and 50s were driven out in those pogroms against them. I mean, they were, markets were blown up, people were killed, neighborhoods were bombed to drive them out to the edges of Israel, and now we have a mopping up going on. And then the media dare claim that these are invading Muslims, invading Arabs into Israel. It's just such a hoax.
It is. It's black is white. And, you know, on November 5th, one day after the blockade, Israel attacked Gaza. They killed six Palestinians, six Hamas officials. So Israel really did break this ceasefire. As far as the rockets going back into Israel, they're not only ineffective, there is some reason to think that at least some of them are being fired by Israeli collaborators to give Israel this justification for going in. It's a repeat of Gliwitz. I mean, remember back on the first day of the aerial bombing campaign into Gaza, the Lebanese Border Patrol found a whole bunch of rockets just inside the Lebanon border pointing back at Israel, and they dismantled them. And it appears that this was an effort, again by Israel, to shoot a few rockets back into Israel, say, oh my goodness, Lebanon is attacking, and restart that war as well. Even today, Israeli warplanes are overflying Lebanon without permission. That's an act of war. They're trying to provoke Hezbollah into firing at their jets or doing anything that Israel can point to as an excuse to start a new ground war in Lebanon up to the Litani River, which they have been coveting for quite some time as a water resource. So it's this incredible fakery and hoax going on. We know the motto of the Mossad, by way of deception, thou shalt conquer. We know that Israel has faked attacks against others under false flag again, and it's entirely possible that a lot of these bottle rockets that are being fired, because they're homemade, nobody really knows where they're coming from.
Let's stop there. Yeah. Let's stop there. They're also trying to claim Iran is manufacturing these. Now, clearly, Iran was backing Hezbollah in the north, but there's not a big connection with Iran and this rival group, Hamas. But on top of that, we forget, lending credibility to what you're saying and many Palestinians are saying, we know that the puppet government that Israel had in Gaza was kicked out in the elections, and they wanted Israel to go in, and we know they have massive operatives, tens of thousands, that were formerly in the government and military in Gaza, and they are the exact type of people that could be firing those rockets back into Israel. So you have the motive, you have it all right there. So certainly there's a lot of evidence to that point. And plus, Israel founded Hamas to begin with, so it could be coming from Israeli operatives within Hamas as well, not just from the Fatah.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting history, because when Arafat and the PLO started to unite Palestine in politically... Do we have to break here?
Yes, we're going to break.
Okay.
When we come back, let's get into that in the mid-70s, when the PLO was really getting a lot of credibility over there, they founded Hamas as a counterweight to it, and our source of that is the Jerusalem Post, UPI, and others. That is admitted. Israel doesn't deny that. All right, we'll come right back with Mike Rivero after this quick break. We'll continue with what's happening in Israel, move into India and Pakistan, then look at the economy and take some of your phone calls. Rivero is our guest. Mike, let's continue as we speak to him from Hawaii. Got him up on the video feed right now at PrisonPlanet.tv as we simulcast the four-hour radio show here today. Continuing with the point you were trying to make as we went into the break.
Well, basically the point is that when Yasser Arafat started to get the PLO to unify the Palestinians into a political movement to argue for their independence or their liberation, Shin Bet, the Israeli security force, created and secretly funded Hamas as a counterpoint to prevent the formation of a united Palestine. They just wanted to keep playing the two groups back and forth off of each other. Then when Arafat was assassinated, Israel basically stopped funding Hamas because they figured they didn't need him anymore, and Hamas basically didn't want to give up the political power they had collected, so they started working on their own and becoming, again, what Israel most feared, a political entity able to unite the Palestinians in their quest for independence from Israel.
Well, that which does not kill you only makes you stronger. I mean, with this type of oppression, these people don't have a choice. They're always going to have to fight back, and frankly, all this adversity is only going to make them more cohesive.
Absolutely. So Israel comes up with Fatah to basically play against Hamas the way they had originally funded Hamas to play against the PLO. And Hamas realizes they've been double-crossed on this matter, and Israel's going to keep on playing the game. Anytime anybody is able to start pulling together the Palestinians, Israel will create a new fake front group with a lot more money and a lot more support
to stage terror attacks.
Well, to keep the Palestinians divided against each other, and as long as they're squabbling against each other, they won't unite against their oppressors. It's called divide and conquer. We see it here in the United States, the rich against the poor, the men against the women, the young against the old, constantly the blacks against the white, constantly finding these divisions and keeping the American people squabbling among themselves. Yeah, rather than uniting against those entities which are actually the root of all their problems.
All right, other points. Where do you see this going? How do you see this unfolding, the siege of Gaza City and the other two cities in the Strip? Where do you see that going? Do you see an escalation in U.S. or NATO or U.N. forces? We know those were openly discussed about going into southern Lebanon, but that didn't happen because of the unpopularity of Iraq and Afghanistan. Do you see them now getting new legs or a new lease on life, like Kissinger saying, you know, the world loves Obama so much, we're going to be able to get a lot of our New World Order agenda done, as he said at the stock exchange yesterday on CNBC. Where do you see this going? How do you see it unfolding?
Well, obviously, the people who want a greater regional war are continuing to push for that. We saw it all over the talking heads earlier today. They're talking about how Iran is inevitably linked to what's going on in Gaza. They're trying to sell this as hard as they can. I think Israel's going to try and make any excuse they can to at least go back into Lebanon. This is going to not begin and end just with little tiny Gaza. This is definitely an opening to try and get a huge regional war going. There's a huge rush because of the upcoming Israeli elections. And of course, even though Kissinger's making that statement about New World Order and Barack Obama, the consensus opinion within Israel itself is that Obama, as supportive as he has been for Israel, is not going to be writing the blank checks that Bush did for these wars of conquest and genocide. And so they want to get this thing really cranked up before Obama can come into office.
They want to create the problem to commit the United States regardless. I agree with you. Now, by the way, their Secretary of Defense, their former Prime Minister, has been on record saying this. He said it 3 days ago. He said it on Saturday. He said, we may widen this into other areas like southern Lebanon. So they're on record confirming what you're saying, that they want a wider conflict.
Yeah, absolutely they do. They want to go up at least to the Litani River. There's always been talk about Eretz Israel. They'd love to go into Syria. And ultimately, of course, as we've seen over the last several years, Israel is pushing for war in Iran, just as Israel was the prime
motivator. Oh, yeah, they're claiming Iran. In fact, they have editorials in the LA Times with Israeli operatives openly saying we want to, you know, have war with Iran. And also Israel's admitting they got their nose bloodied. Their aura of invincibility got shattered by Hezbollah. You know, those people sworn to fight to the death against the one of the most modern militaries in the world 2 years ago. And so Israel is again wanting to they've been building up, coordinating, planning to try to get this image of infallibility and invincibility back, because they need that Borg image of resistance is futile.
Yeah, absolutely. Israel's reputation, Israel's image is definitely on the wane here. And I think regardless of what happens in Gaza, the reality is Israel has lost this war in the court of public opinion.
And it's only getting worse.
Absolutely.
Mike Rivero, stay there. We're going to come back and get into the economy and take calls at 800-259-9231. Stay with us. Our guest. I want to go to your phone calls here in just a few minutes. Before we get into the economy, though, Mike, I know a news hound like you, you've probably seen it. It's probably up on your website, whatreallyhappened.com. I know it's up on Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com. Kissinger calls for a new world order on CNBC yesterday. And we played the clip back in the last hour. We're just going to roll some of the videos so people can see this demonic creature there on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. And he, again, says we can use this crisis. Well, I mean, you mentioned earlier, so I guess you have seen it, for our new world order. Again, why are they constantly admitting they're setting up a new world order, a world government? Why have they had the Financial Times of London and all these papers come out and say, yes, there's a world government. Yes, it's for your own good. It's going to save you. While meanwhile, the FBI training manuals and police training still tell the police it doesn't exist. Insane people say it exists. I've got police manuals where it says, go ahead and take somebody into jail if you find this stuff in their car, because they're probably a terrorist. Police chiefs, support your officers if they arrest somebody for no reason. I mean, that's in mainline police magazines, not even the semi-classified or restricted stuff that we've gotten from police and posted on the web and covered here on the air. I mean, it's insane. They're openly announcing all this, but then saying we're not supposed to talk about it.
Well, basically, it's a public relation campaign. They're trying to put the most positive face on this idea of global government. But at the same time, they're trying to silence those who are critical of the whole concept. And that's the reason for this double standard in behavior. The reason for all the positive articles, as you point out, is to convince everybody that this would really be a very, very good thing. That's a hard sell right now, because globalism is seen by most people as what got us into this economic mess. Because under the old nation state model, the United States economic problems would have been confined mostly to the United States. It was this whole international global trade that allowed the U.S. economic meltdown to start dragging down the rest of the world with it. So selling globalism as a cure for globalism is going to be a really hard sell, and this is why they're going out and they're trying to silence anybody who's pointing out this very obvious discrepancy.
Well, exactly. And then meanwhile, Greece has been deep into the IMF World Bank plan, where they come in, they take over the economy, they hand over the roads, the power plants, the infrastructure for pennies on the dollar to foreign corporations. They lay off the people. Their economy implodes. So the public starts peacefully demonstrating. The police shoot some folks. Then the people start attacking the banks, the central banks, the government buildings. So the police have now been caught. It's on mainstream Greece television. The police admit it. Dressed up like anarchists, out attacking shops and cars and the general public, so they can say, oh, look, the protesters are attacking the Greek people, to try to fool the public into joining with the establishment. But they're playing a 10, 20, 30-year-old game. They're now being caught. When they tried last year in Ottawa during the North American Union Summit, the police attacked police dressed up like anarchists. Turns out they got caught. That was in the major papers. Denver Post a few months ago admitted that in Denver, the police attacked police in front of the news cameras in a staged event, dressed up like protesters so they could attack the peaceful crowds on the opening day. All of this going on and happening, and so they're having to stage these events as globalism begins to collapse, and now they want to bring in their iron fist of police state, not just in Greece, but in Europe and the United States and England. It isn't going to work. I mean, people know they're the bad guys.
Yeah, it really is. It's a very different world because of the alternative media, because of the internet especially. The tricks that worked 30, 40, 50 years ago don't work any longer. And unfortunately, the people in charge of these projects, they're a bunch of Cold War fossils who just don't get it, that the fundamental nature of information flow in our society has changed drastically, dramatically. It is as great a change as that which accompanied Gutenberg's invention of movable type printing. And if you look at the history of the social upheaval that followed the availability of cheap books and cheap printing, it sets a lot of patterns for what we're seeing now, where the old established order wants to go back to the world where they had this incredible control over what you saw and what you thought, what you read. I mean, we're literally seeing they're trying to go back to the days of the Cold War with Russia, and they're not getting any traction with it.
Absolutely. Let's get into the economy briefly and where you see that going, and a little bit about Obama's plan for the economy, which again is a bunch of corporate payoffs to $1 trillion to basically buy off, they've already given the banks their $8.5 trillion and counting. We haven't gotten new numbers in 3 months, in 3 weeks, but in the first couple months of the bailout, it was $8.5 trillion, according to the AP, Bloomberg, and other publications. And then we have the private Federal Reserve telling Congress, we're not going to tell you what's going on. And then a board of governors, a member of the Federal Reserve, says we're not even allowed to know what's happening. Only the Fed in New York and the Treasury are doing this. And we've been told the War Powers Act has been implemented. And then that's in Bloomberg and AP. I mean, we're under financial receivership dictatorship. But if we're able to expose that, it can't stand because it's so criminal on the face of it. So how do we break the trance? You know, the public's partially awake right now, but how do we break the trance and let them realize the magnitude of what's really happening?
Well, I think it's kind of automatic because we're looking at probably 11% unemployment in the next couple of months. We're probably looking at 20 to 25% unemployment by the middle of 2009, and that's depression level. And the government is grudgingly admitting we're in a recession, but I think most Americans are aware we're in a serious, serious trouble, and we're seeing situations where Bernie Madoff has just underscored the fact that a lot of the game playing we've been seeing in Wall Street was very unproductive gambling, casino, get-rich-quick scamming. And the losses for it all are being dumped on the American taxpayer. I mean, they've already caught Bernie Madoff violating the terms of his bail. His wife and he have been mailing their personal jewelry, about $1 million worth.
And he's still out on the street.
He's still out on the street. The judge would not put him in jail. I think they want him to leave the country because what we're hearing from other sources is that a full investigation into his little scam is going to reveal that most of these other Wall Street investment groups were also running Ponzi schemes.
Well, that's already admitted. I mean, that every major bank in the world had investments with him. It's more like $100 billion. And they knew fully, and people were telling the Securities and Exchange Commission back in 99, 98 that this was a fraud, and of course they didn't investigate. The FBI will go set you up if you don't pay 10 grand in taxes to the IRS. You write your checks, by the way, to the Bernie Madoff Federal Reserve. But if this guy steals 100 million bucks, there's no problem.
Yeah, because the people at the top were all neck deep in it. They don't want you to know where that $100 billion went. So what they're going to do is they're going to pay off the losses again with a taxpayer-funded bailout.
But that's the real danger. That's the real danger is that these guys are cornered. They're going for broke. They control through fraud the world's central banks. They've bought up most of the economy through fraud. They've debased the currency. They've moved into the real assets. And they're leaving a rear guard police state here, and it's accelerating globalism. I mean, I talk to people that work at IBM. They've already had massive layoffs. They're now literally telling everybody, okay, you're only part-time trainers now. Here are all your end-to-end replacements who are making $7 an hour, and you're all going to be fired in a few months. So you can take it or leave it. I mean, I don't think the public realizes that through this crisis, the race to the bottom is now going to be accelerated, and that this collapse will actually centralize more power in the hands of fewer people.
Well, you know, I think what the American people need to realize is that all of this debt that they are in was manufactured with counterfeit printed up money. I mean, the house that you're living in today is exactly the same house it was 20, 30 years ago, but somehow because of all this extra money that was printed up out of thin air by the Federal Reserve, its value and the debt that you owe on it is now much, much, much greater. And this is over and above the fact that over the course of a 30-year mortgage, you're going to pay the banks five times what the house actually cost by the time you add up all the interest payments. So we are, as a nation, we have lost our way. We have wandered away from the making of products to make money, and we made money the product itself. And the things that are used to create wealth, like houses, cars, TV sets, automobiles, all these things
all
we used
gone.
To make, it's trivialized. It's marginalized. Our whole economy.
Yeah, we've got
is
the
based-
fiat economy eating the real economy, and then they've taken the fiat money when it still had value and bought everything up. Now we're left to not just have an economy, but to owe this fiat money to the very bankers that stole it from us. I mean, folks, this is just indescribable. Mike, I've studied history. I've studied the history of financing, and there have been similar things done on a smaller scale in third world countries by the very same gaggle of money changers. But I've never seen anything even approaching in the arrogance, the openness, the wild-eyedness. Again, they're going for broke.
They absolutely are, and I think we're seeing here is the looting of the nation prior to its ultimate collapse, and everybody's out to make a fast buck and fill their own pockets and get the money offshore.
And again, that wildcatting at the end as it's imploding makes them even be more aggressive.
Absolutely, because they're realizing that the normal mechanisms of law enforcement, it's like what they're doing with Bernie Madoff, $50 billion and he's still allowed to stay at home. The message has gone out, loot the nation at will, nothing will happen to you.
And
so it's open season on the American taxpayer.
And again, they said 3 weeks ago at least $50 billion. Now they're saying, oh, it's much higher. It could be more than $100 billion.
They still don't know where it all leads. There are still people walking around who think their money was safe in federally regulated banks, not knowing those federally regulated banks were putting their money into Bernie Madoff's pyramid scheme.
Well, you hinted at this. Yeah, knowing it was a Ponzi scheme, but they were insiders, so they'd be protected. And that's that. Look, his sons, this company, this guy wasn't running, hundreds of billions of dollars of investment over the years, 50 to whatever, $100 billion that, at the end of the musical chairs, the folks that didn't get chairs, but hundreds of billions over the decades, founder of the NASDAQ, formerly its chairman. I mean, he's really taking the fall right now, claiming he created all the fake computer databases. He sent out all the fake forms. He filed all the fake forms with the government. I mean, that's absolute bull.
It absolutely is. I think his sons turned him in so that they could stay out of jail, but they're as guilty as anybody else. And Madoff is going to get off free because they're already planning an insanity defense. He had so much money, he just went crazy, and that's why he did this Ponzi scheme, and he really didn't know that he was doing wrong, and they're going to do this little tearful thing, and they're going to get him out of jail, and it's just going to be this incredible miscarriage of justice, and the $100 billion losses is going to be dumped on the working-class Americans. Like everything else, and what Americans need to realize right now is the sum total of all these bailouts and repays and coverage and compensations dumped on the American taxpayer already works out to an additional $100,000 per American in added tax burden that you're going to have to pay that you will get nothing back from.
And let me stop you. That's currently what's owed. If we paid it today, the interest is racking up.
Absolutely.
I mean that's obligations versus what's currently owed. Let's go to phone calls. Ronnie in Texas, you're on the air, sir. Welcome. Yes.
Thank you, sir. With U.S. taxpayer dollars in Gaza now, Israeli thugs continually commit collective punishment, which is a war crime, people. And why? Because that bigoted, socialistic, totalitarian, criminal regime of Israel supposedly believes God has, quote, chosen their own form of bigotry over all others. And why? Because you and me, as U.S. taxpayers, continually pay them to kill people. So what's going to stop that? It's when you and me, taxpayers, stop the payments for killing. It may slow down. At least our collective guilt as U.S. taxpayers will finally begin to lessen, but who can stop the killing? Those evil stooges for Israel, you and me, U.S. taxpayers, must just say no to the status quo.
All right, Ronnie, I appreciate your call. I want to get to a lot of callers, but since you mentioned that, Israeli tank fire kills 42 at UN school. That's what the medics are reporting. This is out of Reuters. And this is only at one facility, and most of them teachers and children. Your comments on that, Mike Rivera.
Yeah, this is the second UN school that Israel has destroyed in Gaza, I think, in the last 24 hours. And it's absolutely evident that Israel is not targeting just Hamas. They're killing everything that moves.
Well, they want to drive incendiary bombs. They want to drive out observers. They've said they're targeting press and international observers. Go ahead.
Yeah, they already got the press out. The remaining media in Gaza are confined to a media city of Israel's designation. They're trying now to block the Twitter and SMS messages that are coming out of Gaza. They're trying to completely isolate it so that the world does not see what they do. They kept out the International Red Cross, and the Red Cross were allowed into the German concentration camps during World War II, but Israel won't let them in. What are they hiding?
Well, we know they're running a siege. They're leveling those areas like Fallujah. Let's go ahead and take another call. Peggy in PA, you're on the air with Mike Rivero.
Hello. The reason I called is that I would like a comment from either of you as to how I should steer some research. I noticed in the I was of the age in the 1980s when I noticed the goddess movement come into popular culture in Europe and in America. It really didn't go anywhere. It sort of fizzled out and disappeared. And I have noticed, based frankly, Alex, upon learning the techniques that your guests and you use to investigate, you know, that you have to look in certain areas. And I've noticed that there was, it seems to me that there was a government effort or an effort from some corner to completely eradicate it from the public consciousness. You just don't find any comments about it. Even on the Internet, there's really nothing.
Goddess movement.
The goddess spirituality idea.
Well, I mean, that's everywhere. That's what the Masons worship. That's what they worship at Skull and Bones, is the goddess Eulogia, the goddess Columbia for the United States.
Well, let me refine it, Alex. One thing that they always, I know for a fact, because of my own examination of old textbooks and so on, and also writings from the 19th century, is that in Europe, before the warlike tribes came in, all over Europe, there were goddesses went back to like 20, 25,000 B.C., and there really was no god. In other words, it was a very peaceful
continent. I appreciate your call. I know what you're talking about. This goes into the Merovingians and all that, and it's actually the Illuminati religion. They worship the female side of the god instead of the male side of the god. We're not really getting into that today, but fine. You're welcome to bring that subject up. That's not really... Mike, would you like to comment on that?
Well, I'm in agreement with you, Alex. I don't know where this lady is researching, but the whole goddess mythology is all over the Internet. My wife actually refers to it a lot in her creative works, so I don't think there's anything about it being suppressed or repressed. It's just a case of fashions and trends. It was popular for a while. Now people have moved on.
Yeah, we're going to go to break here. Final segment with Mike Rivera. Come back to Joe, Sean, and Chad. This hour is really going by very quickly. Be sure to check out Mike's website, whatreallyhappened.com. Be sure and spread the word about our sites as well, prisonplanet.tv, infowars.com, prisonplanet.com, jonesreport.com, truthnews.us, arnoldexposed.com, whatistheendgame.com. And the list goes on and on. We're redesigning PrisonPlanet.tv right now, by the way, and upgrading all of that. And we're live at PrisonPlanet.tv right now. If you're a member, go log in and watch the TV show. It will roll on with many others coming up. Straight on for the tyrants. Liberty movement is strong. Coming straight on. All right, let's go back to the calls here. Let's talk to Lori in Hawaii. Lori, you're on the air with Mike Rivera.
Hi, Alex. Just a quick background. I'm from Kauai, Hawaii. I have a 18-year-old. It's the hip-hop generation that's going to wake up America, too. For 8 years, I voted for Bush. I supported the war, and then I finally turned off my TV and found out the truth. I got to get unbrainwashed. My question is aren't we supposed to support Israel? I'm a Christian, and I think our American people are led to believe that, but is it the government that's corrupt? I watched Fabled Enemies. I watched Loose Change. I watched it all. It took my 18-year-old 7 years to convince me to find out the truth, and now I've been researching on the Internet and everything like that, so I wanted to see if you could direct me to some good information to research. And
let me comment on this. I don't hate Israel, okay? I don't hate England. I don't hate Germany. I don't hate China. Most governments throughout history are run by groups that want power and control. And then we'll get Mike's final comment on this because we're almost out of time. What happens here is this is just more colonialism. The Ottoman Empire fell after World War I. They lost control of what was Palestine, what was on the map is Palestine. And then British Zionists funded, the Rothschilds funded, that's public, it's admitted in Israel, everything's dedicated to them, to go in and carry out terror attacks to kick the British out and then to kick the Arabs out. And so then, around that same time, there was financing and funding in U.S. churches by the Council of Churches, now the World Council of Churches, to create this new religion based around, you know, that this is Israel and that the Antichrist is going to attack Israel and that we have to get behind Israel or we're going to hell. When my Bible in Revelations and Daniel and Ezekiel says that Israel didn't do what they were supposed to do, so they were kicked out, and that the Antichrist will go to Israel and say he's God. Okay, and so I mean, just from that perspective, you want to argue it on a religious basis, it's completely twisted compared to what the Bible actually says. Does that mean I'm even supporting the Muslims or I want them to, you know, kill all the Jews and kick them out? No. The point is Israel's mopping up and pushing everybody out and is very secular and doesn't allow Christians to preach in Israel, and that's not reported here either. Mike Rivero, and I appreciate your call. You can call back another time. We can talk more about it. I'm sorry we're just out of time. The clock, another guest coming up. In closing, Mike Rivero, comment on that.
Just real quick, I mean, there is no question that Israel has successfully exploited the religious beliefs of American Christians for purely propagandistic purposes to build support for Israel's actions. And a lot of people are, as this caller is, very confused because they think what is going on now in Gaza is somehow part of the biblical Israel of 2,000 years ago, and there really is no connection. It is a false link fostered by the current government of Israel purely to build political support for what otherwise would be seen as violations of the Ten Commandments.
And then meanwhile, we see the Israeli lobby aggressively going after the Second Amendment here, going trying to set up warrantless searches, police state, and really pushing for anti-democratic moves in the United States, kind of capturing us as their Hessian mercenary supply chain. Mike Rivero, I want to thank you for coming on with us, and we'll talk to you again the same time next month. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me again.
You bet. We'll be right back.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Well, I have read his writings for years. And Ron Paul says this is one of the people that's taught him much of what he knows. This is his first time on air with us, but I hope it's the first of many visits. Dr. Edwin Vieira Jr., Ph.D., J.D., holds 4 degrees from Harvard College, AM, Ph.D., Harvard Graduate School of Arts and Sciences, and J.D., Harvard Law School. For more than 30 years, he's practiced law with emphasis on constitutional issues. He is also one of our country's most eminent constitutional attorneys, having brought 4 cases that were accepted by the Supreme Court and having won 3 of them. In the Supreme Court of the United States, he successfully argued or briefed the case leading to the landmark decision Abood versus Detroit Board of Education, Chicago Teachers Union versus Hudson, Communications Workers of America versus Beck, which established constitutional and statutory limitations on the use of labor unions in which private and the public sectors may apply fees extracted from the non-union workers as a condition of their employment. He's one of the world's foremost authorities about the role of the Constitution as it relates to money, and has written numerous monograms and articles in scholarly journals and lectured throughout the country. His most recent work on money and banking is the 2-volume Pieces of 8 that Ron Paul cites, The Monetary Powers and Disabilities of the United States Constitution, the most comprehensive study in existence of American monetary law and history viewed from a constitutional perspective, available at piecesof8.us. He's also the co-author of Nom de Plume, or the political novel Cash Maker, A Federal Affair 2000, and it just goes on and on. Sir, I didn't do a pre-interview with you, but I want to get into the real history of the Second Amendment, a brief history of what our real monetary system should be and versus the private offshore Federal Reserve, and then, of course, your overall view of the police state, the classical police state that is unfolding in this nation. Mr. Vieira, it's great to have you on with us, Doctor.
It's my pleasure to be with you, Alex. Where would you like to begin?
Well, we're going to break here in about 3 minutes and come back in a long segment. Tell folks about your awakening, some of the work you've done, and some of the things you think are most important right now.
Well, going in reverse order from what you listed, we are seeing the development quite clearly, intentional development, of a top-down police state apparatus out of Washington, D.C. I do not believe that this thing was set up originally because of the 9/11 event, the so-called international terrorism problem, because, of course, we know the Patriot Act, first version of the Patriot Act, was drawn up long before 9/11. They were simply waiting for some episode to justify putting it into legislation. I think what they're really anticipating, and we're seeing it unfolding now in the markets, is the breakdown of this basically corrupt and unsustainable monetary and banking system centered around the Federal Reserve. And they know when this comes down in a world system entirely based upon central bank fiat currency and credit expansion as a method for creating money, that they're going to see social, economic, and political dislocations unlike any that have been seen before, certainly maybe an order of magnitude worse than occurred during the Great Depression in the United States in, from 29 to 32 when it really broke. And they are anticipating that under those circumstances, they're going to need to crack down on the population with essentially police-type controls. And that's why this whole Homeland Security paranoia has been generated out of Washington, is to prepare the groundwork for that, on the one hand, in developing the agencies and forces that are necessary to put it into effect, and on the other hand, creating the psychological acceptance, acquiescence, if you will, on the basis of which the population will simply be expected to roll over for this kind of control. And ultimately, this is directed towards, whether intentionally or not, it's certainly going to result in the destruction of our basic constitutional form of government and all the freedoms and economic prosperity that go with it.
All right, Dr. Edwin Vieira is our guest, and we'll be back with Dr. Edwin Vieira right after this quick break. And we're going to break down what this top-down police state is going to be like and how do we try to avert it or reverse it. Stay with us.
From his Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Dr. Edwin Vieira is our guest. For stations that just joined us, we were getting into where this top constitutional scholar has won three times at the Supreme Court, the top-down police state, the classical police state they've borrowed from the Nazis, the communists, the inquisitors of old, all of it integrated into this surveillance grid, this total federalization. They smokescreen the public saying, oh, this whole police state's to fight Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda. And then now they're saying, oh, we're going to use 20,000 U.S. troops. Oh, Obama's going to have a million-person corps as big as the military, domestic spies. You're going to have to be drafted 18 to 24 to serve the government. This is all happening. And now they're admitting that they set it all up for the financial collapse. So we're going over this. There's no more denial here. They've now, in their scholarly publications and in Pentagon directives and Army War College documents, admit this is happening and that they'll even use Canadian, Mexican troops, foreign troops. And then the Congress earlier last year said, why aren't we being informed? And the president said, PDD 51, you're not involved in continuity of government. We've got one of the preeminent scholars on the line with us, Dr. Edwin Vieira. Sir, please continue. Let's start there with the entire police state, what makes a police state, and then hopefully how we stop it.
Well, let's go back to the antithesis of the police state so we'll have a baseline to work from. And, of course, that's the Constitution of the United States, which is based on principles antithetical and really contradictory in every sense to the concept of a top-down police state. Because a top-down police state is talking about control from the top down and obedience from the bottom up, and of course our constitutional system works in exactly the opposite manner. It's liberty at the bottom and control coming from the people and then obedience, in principle at least, by the representatives, whether elected or appointed at the upper levels of government, state, or national. Now, if you look at the Constitution, and I always like to say, listen, when something goes wrong with the machinery that you're using, the smart individual turns to the Book of Instructions, and the Book of Instructions for our system is the Constitution of the United States. The only place in the Constitution where it refers to security is in the Second Amendment, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. And it's a particular kind of security. It's not police state security. It's not all-embracing welfare state security. It's the security of a free state. That's the goal. Instrumentally, Second Amendment tells us that something called the militia is necessary for that purpose. Again, very interesting. That's the only place in the Constitution at the present time where it says that anything is necessary for any purpose. It doesn't say Congress is necessary, the President is necessary, the Supreme Court is necessary. It says that a well-regulated militia is necessary for this ultimately important purpose of securing a free state. So if we were to take that term, homeland security, and pretend for the moment that it's not loaded from the point of view of the people who want to put a police state into operation. Just take that as a neutral term. We'd say, well, the Constitution tells us how to provide for homeland security. We want homeland security in the sense of a security of a free state. We need this thing called a well-regulated militia.
And the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. I mean, it's right there. It's us. They try to play with the definition of a well-regulated militia, claiming it's, as you know, the 1906 National Guard, when it has nothing to do with that. It is the armed population against street thugs and a tyrannical government, not just our right, but our duty to overthrow something that becomes destructive of our Declaration of Independence.
Well, that's precisely correct, because if you take yourself back to the time of ratification of the Constitution, now it's 1787 or the Bill of Rights, 1791, and you ask yourself, what did that term militia mean to those people? Clearly, there's no definition of it in the Constitution. Most of the terms in the Constitution of great consequence are not defined because they didn't need to be defined. People understood precisely what they meant. At that point in time, every adult American in this country knew what a well-regulated militia was.
Because we were a paramilitary armed camp of frontiersmen and businessmen and the freest people in the world.
Well, they were all members in every state in the Union. All of the 13 states, statutes had provided, actually going well back into the colonial period, in many instances to the early 1600s, had provided for these structures called militias, and they were the same in every colony and every state leading up to the Constitution. They embodied every adult free male, and in many instances even some freed slaves were allowed to participate in this. And their basic principle was precisely what you've suggested, that every adult free male had a responsibility, not simply a right, but a duty to be armed, to be trained, to be ready to be called out in any kind of emergency. They used to use the term alarm, was the specific statutory term that you see used for these emergencies that we would call homeland security problems. And it extended across the entire community. So you didn't have a separation in the provision of what we would call homeland security between the people themselves and some elite group of police or homeland security agencies or what have you that have been developed in more recent times. And this was fundamentally important, not simply for the provision of security, but for the maintenance of true democracy. That is, the people who were going to be in control of this situation were the people themselves. We, the people, as the Constitution identifies us.
And as you know, Doctor, the founders said over and over again, this is one of the few things they were unanimous on, they said, we cannot fall from without because we are an armed, free nation of people that are trained to defend themselves. If we fall, it will be from within, and it will be a central bank engaging in money changing.
Right. And, of course, the important thing I think that we've lost in this whole concept is if you talk to the average person about the militia, they do give you what I would call the stereotypical answer, oh, that's the National Guard. Well, the National Guard wasn't formed until it actually began in 1903. That was the first statute, so-called Dick Act, that was passed. So it's about 150 years removed from the actual constitutional militia. But the main problem that I see is people have forgotten their important role in maintaining ultimate democratic control over this government. And as a result of that, one of the things, of course, that happened was the development over a long period of time, but finally culminating in 1913 with the Federal Reserve System, where once again an elite group gained control of one of the two basic powers of government. All political philosophy will tell you the two great powers of government are the power of the purse and the power of the sword. And they have gained control over the power of the purse through the Federal Reserve System, and the power of the sword in the hands of the people where it should be, according to the Second Amendment, has essentially atrophied. So now the people are looking to these Homeland Security agencies, whether they're, you know, they're local police or state police or federal agencies, and they are not seeing themselves as the source of their ultimate security.
And then
so now we have
you,
the two things coalescing,
and then
because
once
the Federal Reserve System, as any good economist would have predicted, people such as yourself and I have been predicting this for decades, for heaven's sake, going back with me into the 1970s, it is collapsing because it's inherently unstable. This is not a system that can be maintained in the long run. And we are about to see Homeland Security problems of a very significant form and spread throughout the country. And at that point, the security responses or the responses to these problems should be coming from the people themselves. But what's happening is that the same group in control of the Federal Reserve System is dictating to us the method by which the problems which it has created are going to be, quote unquote, solved by it and its friends.
And doctor, if I could just interject and get your take on this as you continue laying this out. They premeditatedly, with problem, reaction, solution, and they state this, knew this. They know their system is going to cause this depression. They know it's going to cause civil unrest and rioting, and then the public will beg for troops and federalization on the streets, and then that will set the precedent, they believe forever, for the full, final conversion to the tyranny.
Well, I think there's no question that they understand the fragility of this system. And there's also no question in my mind that they intend to use any kind of, let's not even call it catastrophic event, but serious economic dislocation to advance further steps in their political agenda. What I am wondering is whether the system is not getting out of control at this
point. I think it is.
And I think that's why it's vitally important, because now if that is the case, if it politically and economically is getting out of their control in a real sense, now is the opportunity for the American people to step up and reassert their own control
Yes. Over
this system.
And speak to the microcosm of that. The police admit they have no right or duty to protect you. They have no liability to protect you. But then how dare Chicago and D.C. then say you have no right to protect yourself? This is a basic God-given or organic logos, you know, law of the universe, that any creature has a right to defend itself, even if some dictator says you don't have the right. And so we now have to say, look, we are going to defend ourselves, whether you like it or not, because you can't and won't defend us.
Well, I think that's exactly correct, and it's especially the can't aspect of this. Even if they wanted to, even if you believe that those 20,000 troop deployments that they're thinking about in their own minds might be sufficient, we know that they can't be. Given the kind of social breakdown that may occur as a major economic crunch takes over, they simply don't have the manpower, they simply don't have the level of training, they simply don't have the ability to deploy people into all of the areas of this country where serious economic and social dislocations may take place. And then what are they going to do about essentially economic reconstruction? Troops, I don't care how many you have, troops are not the appropriate method for dealing with that problem. That has to be dealt with by local people themselves reconstructing their own economies, using alternative currencies when Federal Reserve notes are no longer acceptable internationally and probably domestically as well. Dealing with their own questions of local police. And if we, the people ourselves in our own localities, don't take that system, that situation in hand, things are going to get out of hand very quickly. They can't be controlled from the top down.
Dr. Vieira, stay there. When we come back, we'll give out your websites and talk about some of your books and materials, but talk about solutions, what we're going into and where you see things going. Stay with us. All right, let's go right back to our guest, Dr. Edwin Vieira. Sir, what are the best websites? I know you write for newswithviews.com. I know you have some of your own sites, some of the publisher sites. Where should people go to visit to find out more about your important work?
Well, one that we're working on now is called committeesofsafety.com, which is actually a group that's centered in Connecticut. and trying to develop a template for what I call the revitalization of the constitutional militia of the several states.
Isn't that the ancient name of the groups that would manage the militias?
You got it. I think that's why it was chosen. Because what we need to do is to go back and get citizens organized to develop the necessary statutory plans, because it really has to be done if it's going to be done in a properly constitutional format at the state level.
Let's speak to that before you leave. This is a short segment. We've got the rest of the hour, but I wanted to bring up the ancestral almost memories, if you want to call it that, or our instincts as Americans. Were you heartened by seeing all-time record gun sales when Obama was elected? As you know, but for the audience, he is for gun bans. He says that's reasonable in his lawyers speak. I mean, is that not a good sign that the people fundamentally, and even a lot of liberals I know are now buying guns, realize...
In two ways, Alex. Number one, it shows a fundamental distrust of this centralized governmental system and a denial of the belief that Mr. Obama is actually going to change things. I think that's healthy. Let's be realistic about the political world in which we live. And number two, it's a recognition of the point that you made, that in the final analysis, if we are not going to defend ourselves, then we are not going to be defended. That's the very short answer. We have to provide our own homeland security, our own security of a free state, because if we don't, even our local police, and let's assume that we can, trust those folks that they're acting in good faith, they are simply not capable institutionally of providing this level of security that we're going to need. If we don't do it, we're not going to have it.
Well, also, the modern police configuration is not the swashbuckling, real tough guys that were locally controlled we had in the past that could deal with things. It is a classic, cover their butt in their little armored citadels whenever a real crisis happens.
Well, that's another one of the problems. As I say, institutionally, they have other difficulties on top of this. But even if you assumed this earlier model, it still wouldn't function given the level of problems that we're going to be facing. So we have to come back once again to the realization that self-government requires your and my participation. Self-government is not a spectator sport, and ultimately self-government has this most important power behind it, the power of the person. I hate quoting this guy, but he was correct, because he says the same thing as the Second Amendment, somewhat different language. Mao Zedong, what did he say?
Political power
grows out of a barrel of a gun.
Yes.
Right? The people who have that ultimate military power are the ones who are going to determine the political structure and operations of their society. And if it isn't the people themselves, we the people, who control that power, as the Second Amendment says we should and must, then that governing power will fall into the hands of someone else, and we will not like the result.
It is immediately forfeited to the tyrant, always in history. The outcome is always the same, and that's why I hope the listeners out there realize this and spread the word, because if we're not involved politically and don't demand our sovereign rights, then that vacuum will be filled with the parasites.
That's exactly right. If you don't demand your rights by actually exercising them, it's not simply a matter of going to legislators and saying, oh, please do this or please do that. A well-regulated militia requires your participation. And if you won't do that, then your rights are simply going to go away one way or the other.
And on the other side of the coin, we see the tyrants exercising and unconstitutional classic despotism to set the precedent and acclimate the public. So they are practicing looting. They are practicing tyranny. They are practicing warrantless wiretaps against the American people and then flaunting it.
That's right. We don't have to encourage them in that activity. They'll do that spontaneously. We have to get ourselves out of those chairs, out of those sofas, turn off those televisions, and get active in the political realm of self-government in order to have the kind of homeland security that we need, which the Constitution tells us is the only one worth having, the security of a free state. What's the point of having homeland security in a police state? Is that security? Of course, it's the exact opposite of security.
Sir, you've had a lot of foresight with your predictions. We're going to break here in a moment, but come back in a long, 15-minute segment. Longer. I would like you to break down how you believe this will unfold versus how you wish it would unfold, or different avenues, different ideas of where you see this going, and solutions that I know you're working on feverishly that people can get involved in now to counter this as we go deeper down this rat hole. Any other websites that listeners should check out?
Well, I'm going to be putting up some more material on my EdwinVieira.com, which is really just a holding place right now. And so as these things come out, probably I'll be announcing them in columns on News with Views, and we'll get the word out as I'm developing it.
All right, stay there. Ladies and gentlemen, make no mistake, this is the greatest threat our republic and the world has ever faced.
He's going the distance. He's going for speed. She's all alone in a time of need.
Whether you like it or not, we are going into this system. Whether you like it or not, we have global conquerors. That's what world government is, run by private financial institutions. The same ones our founding fathers fought, the same people President Andrew Jackson fought, the same people Lincoln fought. The same deal. Dr. Edwin Vieira is our guest. I covered his bio at the first. Just an amazing individual. Has been at the Supreme Court four times, won three of the four. Great constitutional scholar and author, lecturer. Okay, we've got about 27 minutes left with you, sir, and I've thrown out all my points. I'm going to just key areas of where you see this going, how we counter it, how we fight it, how you see it unfolding, and what the people need to do. And if you want to add to it, what is going to happen if we don't fight back? What we know is going to unfold. We've already seen so much of it, but where this is headed.
Well, let's start at the end. If we don't take some appropriate action, we are going to see first the imposition of a financial police state in this country, because that's the only way they're going to be able to bring control out of the chaos that the breakdown of the Federal Reserve System is causing and maintain their own power. I mean, that's obvious. That's the key. They need to maintain their own power. And then that may morph, if you will, into some kind of regional governmental structure, which will be the rationalization for creating a new regional currency. They floated names like the Amero, or if you go to higher level, the Phoenix was floated a few years ago. And obviously that will be, if you follow the historical trends in this, that will be the method that they'll attempt to use to expand and maintain their control over the monetary system. All right, so that's their plan in a sense. I leave that aside. They're going to do what they're going to do. We have to respond to this in our own way. Our immediate problem is, of course, the breakdown of the monetary system, because that's where the great wave, almost a tsunami of economic and social chaos is going to develop. Now, it certainly would be possible if we could, in Congress, in principle, pass some of the legislation that Ron Paul has proposed for ending the Federal Reserve System. Very, very unlikely, obviously, with the Obama administration and a Democratic Congress. It's certainly possible to be able to do something like that on a smaller scale at a state level. I have, in fact, drafted a bill originally for New Hampshire. It's on a website called goldmoneybill.org, and it can be applied with a little bit of appropriate tweaking to almost any other state for gradually bringing the state finances, and then one would hope as a consequence of that a large segment of the state's private economy, back to a sound gold and silver monetary base. As far as I know now, there are three or four states where there are some legislators who are actively considering that, and we hope.
And
to
there are
that
some cities that have their own paper script now popping up in neighborhoods.
Yeah, we could see that happen as well. So there are a number of possibilities there as people begin to think about the use of alternative currencies. The thing that worries me a little bit is that we don't have a sufficient basis in public education so that the large percentage of the population simply doesn't have any idea about this alternative. They don't seem to understand even that it's really necessary. They'll kind of hold on to the Federal Reserve System until the whole house of cards crashes down on their heads. So we need public education, number one, in that area. And then number two, we really do have to be prepared for the possibility, if it's not the likelihood, that this monetary system will, in fact, come down in the short term. And if you're looking at the prognostications, I hate to make prognostications, but I would say, my gosh, 18 months to 2 years at the outside before we see some massive inflationary events and perhaps a large segment of the world bailing out of the Federal Reserve System, refusing to accept the Federal Reserve currency as a world.
Well, even the Economist, even the Economist is coming out and saying we're in a depression already.
Well, it's a depression and then hyperinflation on top of that. So you have the worst of all possible worlds.
Hyperstagflation.
The breakdown of the currency simultaneously, and that leads to social dislocation on a mass scale. So assuming that that's coming, and assuming that we can't move in the direction of an alternative currency fast enough to mitigate that or prevent that kind of a collapse, well, what's the next step that we need to be prepared for. Well, that's providing the security of a free state that is going to be necessary to overcome these dislocations, especially at the local and state level. And that's why for several years now, tied into this prediction, I think not much of a prediction is obvious, that the monetary system is coming down, is the necessity for people to organize themselves at the state level to cause the state legislatures to pass the appropriate statutes to revitalize their state militia, because under the Constitution, the militia are described as the militia of the several states. This is a state institution in each state.
Let me stop you.
We're talking about a basic concept of federalism here.
Doctor,
this is not top-down, but bottom-up organization.
Doctor, I want you to go into that in detail, but let me just add a little caveat to get your take on it, because it's so important. As you know, but the listeners may not, Homeland Security has announced, NORTHCOM has announced, Secretary of Defense Gates has announced what we saw them setting up quietly decades ago and coming to a head now in 2008, 2009. They are absorbing the National Guard from the governor's control as a full federal force, and that it says the governors will, quote, serve at federal pleasure as dual-hatted commanders under federal control. So you're saying go back to true localism, which can provide the real security. But instead, they're trying to evolve in the opposite direction towards the crossing the Rubicon classic imperial national police force.
Oh, exactly. And what this proves is that the National Guard, and of course I have nothing against the National Guard in principle, but the National Guard is not the constitutional militia. If it were the constitutional militia, not only would all of the officers be appointed solely by the states, but there would be no way that this instrument could be federalized, as it were, except for three very specific federal purposes: executing the laws, suppressing insurrections, and repelling invasion. So what we're looking at here is just the proof positive of the fact National Guard is an adjunct of the regular armed forces. So we really don't have a constitutional militia structure, I think, in any state that I'm aware of. There are a few states that have some kind of truncated militia structure still in existence. New York may be one. They call it the New York State Guard, and I think Texas has something similar. So there's
Alabama.
Some states that do.
Alabama,
right, but they're a very small number. A very small number. I think in New York it's 60,000 members, and it's supposed to be constitutionally every able-bodied man, and now today potentially every able-bodied woman would have.
And as you know, now Homeland Security has been coming in and recruiting and using them and directing the state guards.
That's right. So we have another problem there, of course, this constant emphasis on top-down, centralized control coming out of Washington, D.C. So we have to reverse that. We have to reverse it for a number of reasons. First, because that's not the mechanism that's going to provide us with a free state. But secondly, it's not the mechanism that's workable if we have a major economic breakdown.
Evidenced by Katrina.
That's right, evidence by Katrina, which was a predicted breakdown. They knew what was coming, and they weren't capable of dealing with it. If we're talking about an economic breakdown as the result of a collapse of the whole monetary and banking system, nobody can predict how far that will go, how difficult it will be to set up alternative economic structures in the localities, what kind of resources will be available. That certainly cannot be done by... Even if you assume that the Homeland Security operation was run by people of eminent goodwill, as Madison said, if your government were run by angels, right, it still could not perform the function necessary simply because it doesn't have the manpower, doesn't have the information, doesn't have access.
And even if they were logistical masters, they couldn't do it.
No, they couldn't possibly do it. We're talking about what used to be called the problem of rational economic calculation in terms of socialistic central management. And that's the problem they would be facing. So we have to go in this opposite direction. The Constitution has been telling us this since 1787 and 1791. Apparently, we haven't learned the lesson. Now we're facing the problems. What I've been proposing to people, and I have a book out, it's called Constitution. You can go and find it on Amazon. Oh, and by the way, Alex, if people go there, don't worry if it says there's only one or two copies. That's some kind of glitch in the way they run that system.
Stop there. Your
Please
phone
just order
cut.
It.
Dr. Vieira, your phone cut out when you plugged the name of the book.
Constitutional Homeland Security.
Constitutional Homeland
Security. Homeland Security. That's the important word. Constitutional Homeland Security. Not the kind of Homeland Security they're giving us from Washington.
By the way,
the constitutional
variety. I have read some of that. I haven't had a chance to read the whole book. I need to carry that on our online bookstore at Infowars.com. I need to contact you because we're always looking for the best creme de la creme material to carry at Infowars.com. But please continue.
Okay, well, we can certainly do that. But in any event, the purpose of the book is to I wouldn't call it a solution necessarily, because it's experimental in a sense. It's to provide a direction, and the program is for people to begin organizing local advocacy groups. I call them Citizens Homeland Security Associations. The fellows in Connecticut call it the Committees of Safety, whatever word you want to use. These are not, quote, militia groups, unquote. They are First Amendment advocacy groups, the purpose of which is to educate the local community, come up with basically ideas of what needs to be done in your own locality, in your own state, the specific problems of Homeland Security that have to be addressed, develop a statutory plan, and I suppose at some stage, in fact, right now I'm drafting a statute for Virginia. People such as myself would become involved in the drafting of statutes. Interact with those state legislators who have some insight and vision in this area. They get the legislation introduced and then enacted. And the big selling point of this kind of organization is twofold. Number one, once you have people organized this way, you can put a great deal of pressure on the state legislature, because you're talking about potentially several thousand people who are out there affirmatively asking for this kind of legislation. And then number two, to make the legislation work will require initially a fairly large contingent of volunteers to step into the breach, as it were, because most people out there will need a fair amount of education before they're ready to take on the duties of a proper constitutional militia. So we're going to have to depend upon volunteers. And once a large segment of the population has been organized this way, there's the ultimate selling point to the legislator. You put this in, you get this passed, it's not pie in the sky. We have 5,000 people in the state of Virginia ready to take on some of these responsibilities and show that this can be done. And once that experiment has been conducted successfully, and I believe it can be, then thousands and thousands of others are going to want to come into this process, because as the crisis develops and they see the serious consequences are impinging on their lives, what will their alternative be, Alex? They'll either do this or they'll be at the mercy of God knows what.
All right, let me stop you there. I've got two points that are questions for you. Let me just make the statement. You can start at the front or the end of the middle. I'm not for concealed carry in Texas and Florida, but that's kind of the system, its way of training us to turn a right into a privilege. But it can also be seen in its working model as 25 on average percent crime reductions within 2 years in states. Those are federal numbers, as you know, but for the audience, where it's implemented. So there's a model where that is at least in the right direction towards a militia, where even this gun-grabbing system that wants a monopoly of power has been forced through the will to at least try to remove some prohibition on people who are armed out in the public. So that's a basis already in the true militia and going back towards the roots. Now, that's one point.
Right.
Then separately, back to what you're saying about creating this idea, this alternative, having the legislation there, I had the idea right after the Patriot Act passed, and I wrote an analysis of it, and people picked up on it and wrote it up, and 800-plus cities passed it, 7 states, last time I checked, was the throwing out the Patriot Act in counties and cities. And then the feds said, well, we're the feds, you can't do that. That was decided after the Civil War. And we said, it doesn't matter. This is, again, moving back towards 10th Amendment, regardless of what you say. And we are declaring that locally, the sense of the city councils, the county commissions, the local governments, the parishes, the states, that we rebuke what you're doing, and we're going to order our police and others not to follow unconstitutional orders. And look at how successful that was. So again, more evidence of what you're saying, truly codified back into law with its constitutional precedent, how powerful that could be. So those two points.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. Let's take those in reverse order. Remember that the militia of the several states are constitutional institutions. The Constitution recognizes these things. So there is no superiority of the federal government over the militia of the several states. Quite the opposite. I mean, the 10th Amendment also, and the 2nd Amendment quite obviously reinforce that. But right in the body of the Constitution itself, these institutions are recognized as pre-existing the Constitution and as being intended to continue in existence thereafter. Secondly, your point about the concealed carry licenses, I would say as well, and I agree with you, that you know, the concealed carry license, the only one you need is the Second Amendment. But we do have these provisions that have been put in, and as a result of them, a lot of people who would not in the past have been able to use a firearm to protect themselves have been enabled by this legislation. What I do in one of the draft bills that I'm working on is build on that and say, all right, those people who come into the militia structures with concealed carry permits, the ones who have already been gone through the vetting of the FBI check and all the rest of this, so we know that they're not criminals or whatever, those people will be given further authority as some kind of deputy sheriffs or deputy police or what have you, depending on the jurisdiction, so that they will now participate directly in crime control, crime deterrence, crime prevention, crime apprehension. So all of a sudden now, instead of having 50 police in Warren County where I live, or 60 sheriff's deputies, it all of a sudden becomes 2,000 of them. And now we begin to expand not simply the concept that you have a right of self-protection, have a firearm for self-protection,
but the posse,
you can expand that right to participation in actual execution of the laws.
And the posse is reborn. Let me bring up two sub-points there. We have the demonization, though, of this ancient basic right, going back to the Dutch or the Swiss or, back to other nations before that, of the local people in the village, protecting their community. We have this federal demonization of the idea of militias or armed citizens. The monopoly of power can only be to the overarching federal superstate. That's A. How do you deal with the fact that they've tried to create a taboo idea like it's pornography or something, and then a subset, they know this natural instinct for self-defense and individual local control, so the feds are creating the false militia under Homeland Security and this million-man domestic security force federally directed with an anti-American agenda.
Well, number one, I don't think that that is going to be successful. They're not going to be able to put that thing together, or to the extent they put something together, it's not going to be proved to be terribly functional. In terms of the demonization, I always ask somebody who looks sideways when I mention the word militia, I say, well, what other provisions of the Constitution do you disagree with?
Yes.
You don't agree with the word militia as necessary to the free state. What kind of a state do you want to live in? You want to live in an unfree state? The Constitution has told. This is a statement of constitutional law. This isn't some kind of hortatory pronouncement. This isn't some kind of an opinion of James Madison. I take most of his opinions to be more or less correct.
This is the great canon. This is the great canon. This is the great law. This is part of the great writ.
That's right. It's part of the structure of our fundamental law, and it makes a declaration that I think is pretty emphatic. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of free state. Just stop right there. If you don't have this structure, the Constitution itself is telling you, you in the long run are not going to live in a free state.
And
well,
what
kind of state do you want to live in?
And the right of the people. The people. The people.
And who are they?
The people.
It's not we the people.
The people, the people,
right.
The people are us. We are the people. And if we don't have a right to be armed, we are slaves. Only slaves are disarmed. First gun laws against blacks, Native Americans. Slaves were disarmed in Rome. Slaves are disarmed in China. We'll be right back. Final segment with Dr. Edwin Vieira. Final segment with Dr. Edwin Vieira. Google his name, find out more. Read his stuff at newsofviews.com. I'm Alex Jones. My website's Infowars.com and, of course, PrisonPlanet.com. This is the great contest. We've had tyranny breeding through the central bank in this nation for more than 90 years. Now they're attempting to fully overthrow the Magna Carta, the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, our basic common law, the greatest ever developed by man in our history. You are defenders of the Republic. Stand with us. Become informed. Don't look for orders from headquarters. Get out there and take action, or be usurped and enslaved. The choice is yours. Dr. Vieira, we've got about 4 minutes left. You've got the floor. Any closing comments or points that you need to relay to the millions of viewers and listeners?
Well, I'm glad you said don't take orders from headquarters, because the opposite of that is, of course, we are the headquarters. We the people, three most important words in the Constitution. If we don't exercise self-governmental authority, then essentially everything is lost. And the only thing I would suggest to people, because I'm trying to get out, as I say, this message on revitalizing what I consider to be one of, if not the most important pillars of our constitutional structure, the militia of the several states, take a look at that book, Constitutional Homeland Security. As I say, it's on Amazon, and I hope, Alex, it'll end up being on one of your websites as well.
And you're quarterbacking this. This is a, you're a great scholar. You've won three times in the Supreme Court. This is a great salvo in the info war, in the fight for liberty. People need to carry the ball.
Well, that's right. First, they need to get informed. Take a look at the book. Take a look at my columns on News with Views, where I go into this in some detail, tying it into the banking and monetary system. Become informed about these issues. Decide for yourself whether this isn't something that's vitally important to be done. If you agree with me that it is, get a copy of the book, sit down with some of your neighbors over coffee, and begin discussing how you're going to implement a local plan to get those state legislators off the ball and moving in the right direction. Because that's the key. Get control over that local political structure. We can't control the federal government in Washington, D.C. at the present time. That's quite obvious. Our only alternative then is to work at the local level, the state level, and that kind of work will serve us in very
and
good
sir,
stead if we find the system coming down on our heads through economic breakdown.
And, sir, that's why, for the listeners, that's why they're moving to totally federalize the states, because they know that is the grassroots solution to remove this tyranny. And we have open foreign banks under war powers telling Congress that they're basically under martial law. That's in mainstream newspapers now. This thing is so illegitimate, all we have to do is point out the emperor has no clothes.
That's right. And the other side of that coin, though, of course, is that the window of opportunity that's open also will be closing. We will run out of time. We cannot sit on our hands indefinitely, because we are the ones that will make it happen or it will not happen.
And
that's the key.
And even if they bring in tyranny and try to block all of this, that's just more evidence for folks. The founders, for as you know, with the committees of correspondence, the Sons of Liberty, tried for decades to fix things peaceably.
Well, that's right. And, of course, that's my goal. We don't want to see the situation develop into any kind of violence, rioting, that type of breakdown in social and economic affairs. But the only way to deter that or prevent that from happening is by the American people themselves reasserting control over this system from the grassroots up. That's the way we're going to avoid real chaos in this society. And anyone who thinks that that's not the key to it, I think, is living in a dream world. All history proves that. If the people themselves don't take control of their own government, then they're going to be subject to whatever terrible things others want to foist on them.
It is the law. It is the law of men, the law of nature, the law of nature's God. Dr. Edwin Vieira, we salute you and thank you for spending time with us.
Thank you, Alex.
Take care. Have a great new year. All right, we are now already, hard to believe, into the final hour of this worldwide transmission. The websites are Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.com, PrisonPlanet.tv. This happens occasionally. We've had Professor Chasadosky on scores of times. His number is saying it's disconnected, so we're having some phone line issues getting him in Canada, but we'll get an alternate number. And from Global Research, we'll call their office, or we can call the radio outfit he's on with and get the number there. But if not, we will just open the phones up in this hour and cover all the news, much of which I haven't even gotten to yet. I really want to take some time out now to commend the crew. I want to commend David. I want to commend Paul Hartman. I want to commend Jaron, the latest addition to our crew. I want to commend everybody here at the InfoWars Command Center in South Austin. And I want to thank all the AM and FM affiliates, Global Shortwave affiliates, everybody that makes this broadcast possible. And my team works very hard. It's very complex what we do here. And we're trying to learn. We're trying to make things better. We're trying to expand. And we put in a lot of long hours to bring you this information. And, of course, I want to thank you, the listeners, the viewers of this radio show. When I say this, it's not to toot our horn. In fact, it's almost crushing. It's not daunting. It's buoying that we're affecting so many people and reaching so many people. But it's also frightening in a way, because to realize the responsibility we have, that tens of millions of people, more than tens of millions, have seen my 21 films, just what we can track on the web. And to know that tens of millions have tuned into my radio show, and hundreds of millions on the thousands of radio interviews I've done. Hundreds of millions. Coast to Coast AM, 16 million per show, per evening, and I've been on that more than 100 times. And all the other radio shows and TV and Russian TV and British TV and Japanese TV and French television, Spanish television. Today, it's already aired on their main TV station in on their main TV station in South Africa, in their major city. Capital City aired today. Endgame aired there. I had them air it for free. I don't charge. I just want to get the information out, ladies and gentlemen. And so we do have Professor Michelle Chalcedosky. We'll come back to him after this quick break, because we're almost out of time. I did want to just encourage, at least once in this 4 hours today, for folks to go to InfoWars.com and financially support us, because we've got to have financing somehow. Plus, these are great books and videos we carry, and books I've written, and other books and videos we carry, like The Money Masters, 3.5 hours long. You want a real master's degree in how the private Federal Reserve crime syndicate operates worldwide in the U.S.? This is just unbelievably powerful and well done. And it's $19.95. It's like $25 everywhere else I've seen it. Fabled Enemies, that I produced, that Jason Burmis made, our newest 9/11 film. It's into the Israeli connection and the phone companies and shadowing the terrorist and clearly involved. And Barry Jennings, who died. Joe Biden's in it. Mike Rivero. Bo Deedle, former NYPD detective, head of detectives. Michael J. Springman, Visa Department, Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, talking about the terrorists working for the CIA. Cynthia McKinney, former member of Congress. I mean, this is an important film right here, and people need to see Fabled Enemies. And it needs to get out. And, you know, I mean, this is the DVD. This is the high-quality digital. This is what folks need. So I hope you'll all go there, and if you've got the money, buy 10, 15 copies. We've got discounts on it if you do. You know, get Truth Rising. Get Endgame. Get Terror Storm. Get things like Mark Dice's book. Support him and our work. Resistance Manifesto. Excellent book. Our newest film we're carrying, it has an extra bonus film on it and a free audio CD. So two films and an audio CD, 1995, The World According to Monsanto. It's got a little booklet inside of it as well. I mean, that's just some of what we're doing here, and we need your support. So, InfoWars.com, a secure online video bookstore shopping cart, and hundreds of books and videos on there. The creme de la creme, as I said earlier. And you can also call toll-free 888-253-3139 to call and get the books and videos as well. And you can also subscribe to PrisonPlanet.tv and see it all. Stay with us.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Coming up at the bottom of the hour, after Professor Chalcedosky leaves us, breaking down the current geopolitical stuff going on in the Middle East and Israel with Gaza bombardment and the India-Pakistan situation. I want to get his analysis on that. We respect it. Trans-Texas Corridor is dead, TxDOT says. KVUE Television, Austin, Texas. Now, I don't believe this for a minute. This is more possum playing, but the fact that they're having to do this is a big victory, so we'll talk about that. Let's go directly to Professor Chalcedosky, joining us from Canada, works with, of course, globalresearch.ca. Sir, break down your take on what is really unfolding in the world right now, and is this Gaza situation the beginning of a wider conflict? Is this the unpopular move by Obama when he goes into office? Will he deploy U.S. troops in the Gaza Strip and other areas?
Well, that's the very difficult question. I don't think that the United States is going to deploy troops. What is possible is that some of Israel's Middle Eastern allies will participate in some kind of peacekeeping operation, which in effect is a form of interference. I'm thinking specifically of Turkey. Turkey and Israel have a very close military cooperation agreement. They exchange intelligence. They have joint military production. So So a country like Turkey would be more likely to intervene, and would of course also have some acceptance by the local Palestinian population who are unaware of these military intelligence ties. The question is, what kind of stance will the Obama administration take upon assuming office? I don't see a major shift in foreign policy. There may be a shift in rhetoric, but I don't see a major shift in foreign policy.
What do you think the big surprise is? And then let's break down Gaza.
As you suggest, they now want to cut Gaza into several strips. Okay, it's a pretty small area to start with.
It's siege. But we see a siege going on.
It's a siege. As I pointed out in my earlier article, this siege has been on the drawing board for quite a number of years. The number of events in recent history which have prepared for this siege. One was the assassination of Arafat, which led to this breakup of the Palestinian movement and Palestinian Authority, but also the removal of all Jewish settlements from Gaza, which at the time, as you recall, was interpreted as a so-called victory for the Palestinian people, and it was part of the so-called roadmap, the U.S.-sponsored roadmap to peace, etc., etc. But in effect, what it was to create a prison territory, which you could not do if you had Jewish settlements on the inside of the prison. So they had to, in a sense, remove those settlements, and as a result now, that territory is surrounded. It is an encampment. It's barricaded, but people are resisting. We have evidence of that. I think, of course, what bothers us tremendously is this is the grip that the Anglo-American, but I would say mainly American, because now in Europe this seems to be a slightly different slant. But the grip that the U.S. media has on public opinion, where they present this invasion, the killings of civilians, children, the use of prohibited weapons, they present this as legitimate retribution for the actions of Hamas, the rocket attacks, without understanding the whole context and without understanding the asymmetry and the loss of life. Okay, we're talking about 17 deaths in Israel over the last 7 years, and if you look on the Palestinian side over the same period, talking about more than 1,000, but people don't seem to be they don't seem to understand that.
There's been 40 plus at the UN school alone today.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely, and they're bombing schools, hospitals, universities, and if this were to happen anywhere else in the world, it would be you know, you'd already have a war crimes tribunal set up and so on and so forth. Now, the people who are now suggesting, Francis Boyle, professor of law, a good friend and colleague of mine, who is now suggesting the formation of a tribunal, a war crimes tribunal, to try the Israeli war criminals and their U.S. counterparts, because this is not strictly an Israeli operation.
This is an international colonial operation. And by the way, Mr. Boyle, who we've interviewed many times, he's written international treaties for the United States in the UN, so he's very prestigious to be saying that.
Absolutely, yes. No, he's a very distinguished lawyer, and he has taken a stance on Israel, on Palestine for quite a number of years. But what people have to understand is that this operation is part of a plan which was established in the early 90s under the government of Prime Minister Ariel Sharon.
The 1948.
In 2001.
The 1948 option.
Well, there was the 1948 option, which is to expel Palestinians. But the actual process of attacking the territories, breaking them up, establishing proxy regimes, was part of a plan which was called Justified Vengeance. The title is interesting. Justified, Operation Justified Vengeance. Now, Operation Justified Vengeance was launched in 2001. It was presented just after the accession of Ariel Sharon to the position of Prime Minister. It was presented by the Chief of Staff of the so-called Israeli Defense Forces under the title, quote, "The Destruction of the Palestinian Authority and the Disarmament of All Armed Forces." But the term justified vengeance was there. And it was commented at the time even by the U.S. press. And then we understood that this plan was, in fact, it was designed by Mayor Dagan. And Mayor Dagan was the national security advisor to Ariel Sharon during his election campaign. He was then promoted to heading Mossad. So he is the current head of Mossad. They actually call him Dagan the gun, the top gun. He's the top spy of Israel. And so that this operation, Justified Vengeance, is also referred to as the Dagan Plan. And the whole idea of the Dagan Plan, of the Operation Justified Vengeance, is to say we need the suicide attacks so that we can then enter on acts of retribution, so that they would actually time, they would do scenarios. They say, okay, there's going to be a suicide attack. We want those suicide attacks to occur because then it gives us the pretext and the legitimacy to bomb Gaza or the West Bank, you know, and we can use F-16s. And they started using F-16 jets at the outset of the Dagan plan. So what's happening today is very much part of a broader agenda. Now, I recall that we've published several pieces on this Dagan plan or Operation Justified Vengeance.
No, you've been reporting on it for years. You've been very concerned.
Absolutely. And the thing is, I went back to some of the writings that we had published, including the writings of Tanya Reinhardt, who is a professor of linguistics at Tel Aviv University. She's actually a student of Noam Chomsky at MIT. And she died under very mysterious circumstances a few years ago at age 50 or so. And
she predicted very well.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, she looked into the whole issue of this Dagan operation. There were other analysts, but essentially what was envisaged was an invasion, quote, an invasion of Palestinian-controlled territory by some 30,000 Israeli soldiers. Okay, now, they won't be able to do it with 30,000. They'll need much more than that. But the fact is that back in 2001, there was already an invasion plan. There was already a process of, they want to disarm Hamas, but I think they also want to trigger a humanitarian disaster with a view to ultimately triggering the expulsion of the Palestinian population.
And where will they allow them to flee to? Because Egypt isn't letting them in. Will they flee to the sea?
They could flee to Jordan. They could flee to Egypt. They could come to some agreement with the Egyptians because these are allies. Egypt and Jordan are allies of Israel. So, I don't want to make any predictions, but I'm just saying this 1948... as you said, the 1948 solution is expulsion, and it looks that they are creating conditions so horrendous that people can simply not survive within their homeland. I think that is the situation.
Well, this is total siege, cutting off the three major cities and encircling them with troops into the ocean, gunboats, and then blasting all their tunnels they were bringing in emergency supplies. So they're completely cut off and under heavy bombardment with their infrastructure, telecommunications, limited water and electrical systems being destroyed. You have this giant high-tech military doing this, but in our media, it's good. Professor John Sadowski will be with us till about 40 after. I'm going to break down some new developing news. We're going to talk a little bit more about geopolitically what's happening with the military in this short segment. Then for a few more minutes after, I'm going to get into the economic situation, which is Professor John Sadowski's real specialty in a conference they're having. So that's coming up in the next segment. Okay, Professor, India, Pakistan, that clearly was staged. A lot of evidence to that effect. I had General Hamid Ghul on and others to cover that a few weeks ago. I want to get into that briefly, but first, putting a bow on this monstrosity, how do you see it unfolding? How many months will the siege go before they break the back and try to start expelling the people there in Gaza?
That's very difficult to see at the moment. If we recall back in 1999, the aerial bombardments of Yugoslavia went on for several months. They started in March and they finished in June. I don't think that this operation will go on for a very long time. But I mean, there's going to be urban warfare, but it's very difficult to predict. It's very difficult to predict because the Israelis are completely off onto something which is diabolical, and they want to carry it through, and they believe that they're right. They have this self righteousness. I'm not providing a very coherent answer to it.
Well, we've already seen more than 1,000 injured. And what is it, up to like 500 dead now? And that's probably conservative numbers. I mean, how many? It's just going to go on and on, and Israel doesn't care. I saw a London Guardian article saying Obama doesn't know this is destroying his name, his silence. Of course Obama knows. Obama, I mean, his administration's headed up by a known Israeli operative IDF person.
Absolutely. Well, Obama is saying that he cannot act until he's president of the United States. I don't think that he would act any differently. There might be a little bit of rhetoric thrown in, you know.
Well, but, you know, I mean, he weighs in on everything else.
Yeah, that's true.
He's commenting on every other issue. What do you expect Obama's stance to be once he's in there January 20th?
Well, I think that Obama is very clearly aligned with a Zionist, Israeli Zionist agenda. That's very clear in terms of the people he's appointed, in terms of his links to AIPAC. But at the same time, he has this ability to present himself as a humanitarian spokesperson. Some people have said that he is presenting a double image, you know, and in reality, what he's doing is continuity. It's the continuity of the Bush administration. It's continuity in foreign policy. He's keeping on Gates as Secretary of Defense, which means that, in effect, there's not going to be any major upheaval in the military.
Yeah, they're passing the baton, but as Kissinger said on CNBC yesterday, oh, the great image of him in the world, we're going to be able to really get our agenda through with Obama. I mean, he's cynically admitting it.
Absolutely. Well, that is the whole idea, is that you get Obama, who is an African-American, who has the rhetoric to appeal to grassroots opinion in America, who has the support of people in Africa because, he has historical links to Kenya. and provides an image, but that image is
false.
Is false? I'm trying to find a polite word, but it is phony. It's a phony image. It's somebody. It's the nice guy who is a bad guy.
It's a cloaking device.
Bush, at least you could say he's more sincere because his image fits his job description, right?
Yeah, very, very arrogant, yeah. And just said, I don't care.
Yeah, he says, I don't care, but Obama will say deep down, he said, I don't care, but up front he'll say something else. It's the policy of deceit. And people didn't vote for that. They voted for the rhetoric. They voted because they thought that this was going
Stay there. Stay there. Let's talk about India, Pakistan, and then the economy briefly when we get back. All right? Stay with us, ladies and gentlemen. Professor Michelle Chasadosky is our guest. Moving quickly here in our final segment with Professor Chasadosky, the India Pakistan situation 4 weeks ago, from your research, your group of researchers' analysis, do you see the same footprints of an orchestrated, staged, provocateur event?
You're talking about, I'm sorry,
the Mumbai attacks.
Yes, of course, the Mumbai attacks. Well, the Mumbai attacks was, I think, certainly a staged event. It was intended to push Pakistan and India against one another. It was perpetrated, I believe it was an intelligence operation. The alleged terror groups behind this these attacks are supported by Pakistani intelligence, the ISI, which in turn is in liaison with the CIA. I think the purpose of these attacks was, in fact, to create a situation of conflict between two countries, which in recent months, we're actually moving together again. I mean,
and we saw the fake phone call, but they confirmed with the caller ID from, so it wasn't a fake call, they claimed that, from the Indian Foreign Ministry to the Pakistani government saying, we're going to attack you, and then it almost caused a conflict, and now the troops are massing right when they were coming to reconciliation. You have all the intelligence operatives involved leading other terror attacks. Absolutely. Where do you see that going in the future?
Well, again, right from the outset of this event, Pakistan has started to amass troops along its border. It's very difficult to predict what might happen.
But we're in very interesting times.
Yes, we're in very uncertain times. But on the other hand, in both countries, there are people who understand these events. In Pakistan, there are people in the government who understand that their own intelligence agencies are, in fact, involved in sabotaging the political process. When I was reviewing the situation in Pakistan, one thing that came to my attention was that the head of Pakistani intelligence was appointed with approval of United States, bypassing the civilian administration, bypassing the government, and they had a whole series of military appointments.
Yeah, there's multiple governments within Pakistan itself. In closing, in the 3 or 4 minutes we've got left with you, Professor, give us your basic boil down on the economy, where it's going. The banks openly announcing world government of and by the Madoff-type banks, saying we'll pay carbon taxes to them. Break that down and tell us about the conference coming up.
Well, it's easier for me to tell you about the conference in a very short period of time. We're organizing an event. It's the Center for Research on Globalization, which is based in Montreal, downtown Montreal. We're organizing an event next Wednesday of next week, the 14th of January. The topic is on the financial crisis. I will be the main speaker at that event.
And folks can find out more at globalresearch.ca.
Yeah, go to globalresearch.ca. The details as to where the event is being held, you can always contact us by email. I know that a number of people are coming from out of town.
Okay, but in closing, in the few minutes, I got 3 minutes left here, and we're going to move on. We appreciate your time with us. Briefly, the world economic crisis in 2 minutes.
Well, in 2 minutes, I'd focus on one issue which has not been addressed in any meaningful way, even by the critics, is that the handouts under the bailouts, the various bailouts, not only the $700 billion, okay?
The payoffs.
We're talking about something of the order of $8.5 trillion of handouts and loans secured by the Treasury or the Federal Reserve. Now, what this implies is the following. We're going to have a massive increase in the public debt. In the United States, the public debt stands at something like $14 trillion, okay? But if you look at the numbers, the public debt could increase by 25% overnight. And this is occurring at a time when interest rates are virtually flat zero. So who's going to want to buy government bonds and treasury bills when they're only going to get, you know, barely maybe 1% or even less? So that you're in a situation where you need to finance these handouts to the banks. You need to increase the public debt. And to increase the public debt, you have to borrow from the banks, who are the recipients of these of the bailouts. Okay, so they're
borrowing their own money, and we're paying for it.
Exactly,
they get the money, and we pay to give them the money.
Exactly, and the other aspect of this is that if you can't finance the deficit through the emission of public debt, you have to start slashing expenditures, every single category of expenditures. And you have to start privatizing government state assets and so on. I suspect that is what's going to happen. The irony is that those who are receiving the handouts are those who are also imposing the conditions as creditors of the state. So the state, the U.S. Government is financing its own indebtedness at the expense of taxpayers.
Yeah, let's simplify that in closing, because it's so simple. It's hard for my mind to even grasp. The private banks engineer this. Then they say, you've got to give us money to get credit flowing to Main Street. They don't give any of it to Main Street to purposefully implode it. Then they give themselves $8.5 trillion just in the U.S. alone, tens of trillions worldwide from all the private central banks. But that's all backed up with taxpayer money. So we are going to pay them interest to give them the money to take over our economy.
Exactly. Well, they are the brokers of the U.S. public debt. They don't hold all of the U.S. public debt, but they are brokers, but they're also creditors. So that, in effect, they are the recipients of the handouts, and they are the creditors of the state to finance the money that they are going to receive. So we're in a circular situation where the government is financing its own indebtedness through the handouts to the banks, who are also the creditors and the brokers of public debt and treasury bills.
This is a corporate hijacking, a corporate looting, a total takeover.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's
all right.
Very serious. So in any event, if people from the United States wish to join us in Montreal, it's only about an hour from the border, less than an hour from the New York State and New Hampshire. Drive up to Montreal, and we will be very happy to receive anybody who comes from the United States.
Well, I wish I could join you. We also have a lot of listeners on.
Yeah, well, you're a bit far off, but
yeah.
But we'll... Okay, well...
All right, thank you. Take care, Professor.
Take care, Alex. Greetings to everybody in Texas.
All right, thank you for spending time with us. Take care. There goes the professor. We have been making that point over and over and over again, and we made the point before the banker takeover bill that it was a banker takeover bill because the bill said it. Total martial law, private foreign banks openly owning and running the government. And the Congress has bitched and complained. Even Federal Reserve Board governors in the United States have gone to the news and said, this is foreign banks. This isn't even, you know, local governors of the Federal Reserve who are just titular heads over the private banks. We're not even allowed to look at what's going on. We've been told we're under martial law, and we've had congressmen on the show to tell you that as well. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. I always say that because you can't. This is totally insane. This is absolutely, totally, and completely off the charts by every yardstick. This is nothing like this has ever been seen. Normally, the big private central banks going to Nigeria or Costa Rica or Brazil or Asian countries, and they've done it to hundreds and hundreds, sometimes over and over again, the same nation. And they'll go, here's $1 billion paid for by American taxpayers mainly, about 60% of IMF World Bank money. But that's all just fiat as well. But it's backed up by the U.S. military. We'll give your corrupt dictator $1 billion. He keeps it for himself, leaves. And 10 years later, the country's paid back $50 billion, but never even touched the interest. It's all interest. Never getting down the principal. This is even worse. This is where the banks bankrupt everything, cut off liquidity to the public, have all the cash and liquidity hoarded to themselves. They openly buy up other banks, insurance companies, and buy off other corporations and other key infrastructure assets mainly. And then we have to pay tax money to them for the private Federal Reserve giving itself all our money. I mean, that's just unbelievable. And that's the point I make every day, every day, every day here. And the public thinks it's bad that they're taking all this money and we got to pay it back in taxes, but they don't understand that that the groups getting the money are the ones that we've got to pay interest to give them the money. That'd be like if I had a car dealership and I sold you a $25,000 Mustang and I gave you the Mustang, and I paid you $25,000 to give you the Mustang. Here's a Mustang, $25,000, brand new, fully loaded, and I'm giving it to you for free, and I'm going to pay you $25,000 to take it for free. And then I'm the guy getting the free Mustang and the $25,000, and I'm going, you're lucky I'm doing this. You're lucky I'm taking care of you. You're lucky I'm taking this. By the way, if you don't like me taking this, I got troops. Troops that literally have no idea what planet they're even on. Police that have no idea. A public that has no idea. And my concern is, if the scams are this crazy, this wild, this out in the open, what's coming next? What's the new outrageous? I mean, what more could they come up with? I want to get into this Trans-Texas Corridor is dead, TxDOT says. In fact, let's pull that up so we can just put it on screen for folks. Texas, Trans-Texas Corridor is dead, TxDOT says. That just means they'll rename it, but I want to go over that. But before we do that, here is the newest film that I directed, Truth Rising. And it's indescribable, everything that it covers. I mean, it's police telling 9/11 truthers that they're going to plant bombs on them and saying that video cameras are guns, and it's all these world leaders being confronted, and Joe Biden and John McCain and just Bill Clinton, David Rockefeller, the amazing work of Luke Radowski and everybody else. We Are Change, 9/11 truth groups around the nation. A lot of it's activist footage. A lot of it's our footage. This is my cinema verite. There's no voiceover. This is the most cinematically skillful film I've ever made. And it's a totally different angle on 9/11 truth. Arnold Schwarzenegger is confronted in here. So I hope that folks will go to Infowars.com, not just to get a great film for as low as, you can get as low as $6.95 when you get a get it with other videos, but it also supports us, and then you get something you can show others to wake them up. Endgame, this is now recognized by many as the preeminent overall film about world government, the New World Order, the best produced, the most information, 2.5 hours long with 40 minutes of extras. PrisonPlanet.tv members get an hour and 40 minutes of extra extras called Endgame 1.5, but here it is, Alex Jones's Endgame, and Blueprint for Global Enslavement, and I certainly do hope that everybody out there will go to Infowars.com and order these, not just to get a powerful film to give us a gift to wake folks up, but also to financially support us and what we're doing. You can see we're upgrading. We're trying to expand. We're trying to be more effective, a little bit more glossy, and we're going to even improve things more in the future. But we need your support. And it goes right back into fighting the New World Order. So, again, InfoWars.com. Or you can call toll-free and ask about all the different combos and specials we've got. 9/11 Inside Job, baseball caps as low as $5.95, T-shirts as low as $5.95. I mean, that's at cost, folks, for us. That's at cost, most of them. Some of them make like a dollar. And every order gets a free Citizens Rule Book. The big orders get multiple copies. Find out more at InfoWars.com or 888-253-3139. 888-253-3139. What's up, Paul? Oh, you got it. Go ahead and pop Trans-Texas Corridor up on the screen for folks, and I'll that's another story out of – that's Ben Weir. What? That's out of the Austin American Statesman. That's what I thought it was. I've got KVUE. That's the local ABC news affiliate as well with a similar headline, Trans-Texas Corridor is dead, TxDOT says. They told us 2 years ago that the toll roads were dead, and the legislature passed a law saying they couldn't seize the roads and basically for one penny on the dollar or less give them to a foreign Spanish company. The media responded by saying, okay, the toll roads are all dead, as they put them in and opened them. And Rick Perry said, I'm just ignoring all that. And they said, they're no longer toll roads. These are not toll roads. These are pay-as-you-go lanes. So it's like Obama's chief of staff saying, well, you're going to have to serve in a new domestic military, 18 to 24, and for basic training, and then we'll keep you longer if we want. You must do it under law. And they go, well, this is then mandatory. No, it's not mandatory. It's compulsory. Mandatory, compulsory mean the same thing. Look them up. It's like saying, we don't want global government. We want global governance. Well, governance is, means the system of government. I mean, this is a joke. It's like saying, look, the sky is blue. And you say, no, that's not a sky. That's an atmosphere. Same thing. It's a game. It's a word play. That's like saying, that's a fire hydrant. Somebody goes, no, that's a fire plug. Whatever. Trans-Texas Corridor is dead. This is absolutely not true. The national news, I've seen in clips and Fox saying Trans-Texas Corridor doesn't exist. Ron Paul is insane. The official documents say it's part of the Napa Superhighway. They say, hey, doesn't exist. But here it is. They're playing possum, and that at least means they're in a lot of trouble. And they're trying to get everybody to kind of go home and shut up. The Texas Department of Transportation announced this, and it's really a federal office, this morning that it has officially killed the Trans-Texas Corridor, saying that despite the project's visionary aspects, like stealing land 10 miles on every side of the roads, that's only one leg of it. It was 8,000 miles. It is clearly not the choice of Texans. What is that little lying statement? They've had Houston Chronicle polls and others 99%. Lou Dobbs had one 99%. They've had scientific polls 99% are against it. But what are these guys? I mean, it's just all lies. The Texas Department of Transportation announced this morning it has officially killed the Trans-Texas Corridor, saying that despite the project's visionary aspects, it's clearly not the choice of Texans. Like I said, it is true. I was reading that wrong. They're admitting, oh, wow, something actually truthful. I couldn't believe it. They're saying it's not the choice of Texans. DMN file. The announcement comes 6 years after Rick Perry shook up the state's transportation and political circles by unveiling an ambitious plan to stretch highway rail lines and utilities for hundreds of miles, it's 8,000, along Interstate 35 and Interstate 69 corridors, which is part of the Napa Superhighway corridors, 34 of them. The plan, which would cost tens of billions of dollars and relied heavily on private toll roads, was hugely controversial. Amando Seniz, executive director of TxDOT, made the announcement the agency was giving up on the idea of the annual transportation forum in Austin. Make no mistake, Trans-Texas Corridor, as we have known it, no longer exists. There it is. Lawyer speak, as we have known it. Right there. As we have known it. It's not. It's back. It's always going to be there, these bastards. I want to finish up with some final news and tell you about some of the big guests we've got coming up this week. But before I do that, I want to tell you about one of the sponsors that makes this show possible, survivalofseeds.com. Grow your own healthy food for just 4 pennies a pound and break free of the New World Order. This family business buys in massive bulks, in massive bulk, and passes those huge discounts on to the listeners. So they buy in massive bulk. It is a great deal. I've gotten some from them. 15,000 heirloom seeds will provide your family with 7 years of healthy food. Stop buying and eating the New World Order food. Grow your own healthy food in your own backyard. That's 15,000 heirloom seeds for $129. That's real food insurance for the difficult times we are about to experience. Heirloom seeds are the original varieties, non-GMO, non-hybrid. All their seeds date back over a century. Their Mayflower bean came over on the Mayflower ship. Now SurvivalistSeeds.com wants you to become one of their heirloom seed farmers and sell them back to your save seeds years after year because demand is skyrocketing for the rare heirloom seeds. So you can fund yourself as well. It's all about self-sufficiency. You also get a DVD teaching you how to sell your vegetable produce to restaurants, delis, and the farmers markets. Slaves hesitate, patriots take action. SurvivalistSeeds.com. SurvivalistSeeds, one word, .com. We got David Icke coming up for 2 hours on Thursday. We got Alan Watt for 2 hours. One of those are popular guests. I always enjoy talking to him. Riveting and insightful information and analysis. We got a lot of other very interesting and informative guests coming up this week as well. Jason Burmes is going to be here in town. He'll be sitting in some next week as well. And so I look forward to that. And I'm doing a new thing where I have a little pocket recorder. Got to get a new one, though. Turns out it's not compatible with our computers to dump it off. Where late at night when I'm kind of in a calm, reflective mode, I'm going to start doing recordings. We're up in the game here, doing even more, and putting that up on Infowars.com, and that's going to be up in the next few hours as well. So definitely go check out the first time that we're launching that. And all I can say is that I am very, very proud of the crew, the Genesis Network, the Infowars Network, everything that we are doing here. And we reach more people when you spread the word about the show, the free podcasts, the free downloads, the streams, your local AM and FM affiliates that a lot of you are tuning into. That's how we move the ball down the field. That's how we inform people. The solution is an awakening to what's happening. Then the globalists can't misdirect us and control us. Now, after 4 hours, my voice starts getting tired. Trans-Texas Corridor is dead, TxDOT says. But then the director of TxDOT, Amandio Senez, executive director, says, make no mistake, the Trans-Texas Corridor, as we have known it, no longer exists. See, as we have known it. Just like they said, we're not doing toll roads anymore, and then they did them. They want you to all just drop your baseball bats, your mitts, leave the game. Oh, the game's over. Oh, you didn't hear? You know, the meeting was canceled. Local governments always try this. They know a public's coming in to protest something. They say, oh, we changed the meeting, and they go ahead and have the meeting. Each of the dozens of projects that were linked together under the rubric of the TTC included the Loop 9 project in Dallas will remain as a standalone project, he said. So, did you hear that? They will, before I even read the article on air, I said, this is all bull. You just handed it to me. Just knocked my mic off the stand there. I'm kind of out of control here, ladies and gentlemen. And it says, each of the dozens of projects that were linked together under the rubric of the TCC, including the Loop 9 project in Dallas and I-69 project in the South, will remain as standalone projects, he said. And he goes on to say, it's been diminished, but we recognize the inevitability. The TCC is not the choice of Texans. So they're saying, we're going to do them all standalone. They're going to do them all separately, so it's harder to coordinate against it. Compartmentalization. Oh, my goodness. It's just so incredible. Get the word out. This is a fraud, a lie, a scam. Continue fighting all these individual projects. All right, we had a bunch of key guests up today. Rebroadcast with Mike Rivero, Edwin Vieira, Michael Chosadowski. It's all coming up one place, Infowars.com at the Restream right now. We'll be back in 1 minute.